Welcome to episode 176 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is Keith, and I play Crix.
This is Josh. I play Mercs. Yar.
This is Chad, and I play Trolls.
This is John, and I play Protector to Menoth.
As always,
spoilers!
Nice to see that he plays
I'm not on the script. I said spoilers.
He's not on the script, which indicates we request silence from him from now until the end of the episode.
So, just for the record, just so you guys know, so you understand where I'm at, this script is not something that we ever intend to actually follow. I mean, we kind of follow it's a guideline, but it is not.
Oh,
yeah, you're
it is not the end
you're pooping
all.
In a cereal, and
he's
right there.
Crying right now. I can hear you.
Colin, earmuffs. Earmuffs.
You guys are so mean.
Seriously, the script, guys.
Spoilers. That just didn't come out how I wanted it to. That really sucks.
We've got pictures of gobbers with peg legs.
If you really focus hard, you can see it through my eyes. Just pretend I'm Wolverine.
What? What?
Because we saw the whole movie through his eyes.
What's going on?
Oh, sorry.
So,
gobbers with peg legs and little, what, shovel guns?
No, they're harpoons.
They're grappling hooks.
Yeah. They're little tiny harpoon guns.
They're hook shots.
They're hook shots.
Hook shots, okay.
I couldn't be less excited.
Yeah, I'm really not.
I'm sort of excited. I don't know if they're solos or it's like a two-man eliminator team. Actually, maybe they are eliminators. Like goblin eliminators, that'd be so legit. And one of the things that they were saying, like it would be awesome if they were spoilers, is if they shot you and then they pulled themselves to you rather than you to them.
Yeah, if they were grappling hooks.
And if they were eliminators, that would be super badass. So they had gang with each other. They would like walk up, shoot, and then make an melee attacks with gang.
Except that they're gobbers, so everything they do has to be vaguely inept. So yeah, it's going to be like...
Well, then they make repair checks against
them. Against the guys that they're shooting.
Yeah, against the guys they're shooting, yeah.
So they, like, try...
Yeah.
Like, one of them hookshots in, and he actually makes it with his Rat 4 shot.
Yeah.
Then the other one has to try to hookshot in, except now he's engaged.
Yeah.
So they have to take a Rat 4 shot against plus 4 defense. That's effectively a Rat 0 shot.
They have a special rule that you roll all attacks simultaneously for the unit, and they're all taken against the non-engaged
and then
model.
They're
and
like
they all just, like, swarm drag.
Or they have Black Penny.
But there's only the two of them. So most of the time what I'm saying is that one of them's going to hookshot
in. We assume there's only two because there's only two in this. What if it's actually, like, a 10-man unit?
Yeah.
A 10-man unit of Gavra Eliminators?
Yeah.
They have a repair check 6, and every number they fail by... They do that in damage, and every member they succeed by, they heal. Which would be super.
I like that.
Yeah.
I would play that. I would play that unit.
Scott, it's just like they made snotlings in one machine, basically.
Oh my god!
It has to be a new rule.
No, we got it.
So, boxcars, 6 damage. Don't carry your arm 22.
Josh, I think this might be your character unit. Congratulations.
My character unit?
For mercenaries,
like
yeah.
Me personally?
Yeah, for mercenaries.
This is going to go in the Minions book.
How fast do you think they're going to be with a guy with a peg leg?
I mean, if this is like something else that Shay can take, I'm like at least moderately interested because it's Shay.
Well, I mean, it's obviously not going to be for Blindwater or what to call them? Pigs.
Thornfall.
Because they're not pigs or gators. So they're going to be more minions
but
that just work.
Gobbers
for
work in Blindwater.
The swamp gobbers.
Yeah. How do you know these guys didn't come out of a swamp?
I guess.
Where they build their swamp pirate boats and they attack other swamp shipping lanes.
Yeah. All I know is I don't want to be anywhere. Like, I'll probably have to go out of town when these are actually spoiled if they don't work for minions. Because when Adam Crumpton goes on his murderous rampage, like, I just don't want to be caught in the blast.
No, they'll work for minions. They just won't actually do anything.
No.
Like, just much like the Goblin Tinkerer worked for minions but didn't actually do anything, right?
He doesn't work for minions.
He doesn't work for minions. You can't take him in either pact.
Oh.
Yeah.
Get after Adam Crumpton. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. They're not pigs or gators.
I'm just saying, I don't want to be around when he finds out.
Look, they're getting a battle engine and for each pack and like a crazy and two casters. Like they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine.
I'm already bored with the gobbers, but I would like to talk about the battle engine for a minute.
Sure. No, we because those spoilers are obviously fake.
We talk about fake spoilers. We've done it before.
I just want to explain why these spoilers are fake.
You go
lest
for it.
Lest any minion player get their hopes up.
And these have been widely, they've gone around the block, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're all
spoilers
over.
Spoilers of me.
Yeah. So there's, I think what's driving the spoilers is there's like a card shot from, screenshot from War Room or something.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not even a legit one, right? Like, it has a mercenary symbol on it, not a minion symbol on it.
That might have been a Photoshop.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway,
I have a one-word answer why these, at least part of these spoilers, are not true, and that's Soulstorm. Because it auto-generates souls, so it always has a soul. Like, you can always have a soul on it.
Yeah, so the spoilers as we have them currently, it's like, the thing is D3, you range 12, pop 13 shots.
Yep.
It has soul collection from friendly and enemies at a 10-inch range.
Which is huge.
Yeah. It can hold up to 5. If it doesn't start with, if it doesn't have any when it's the beginning of control,
yeah,
it generates D3 plus 1.
Yeah.
Just D3.
So it makes souls if it doesn't have them. And then has Soulstorm.
That's the one.
And it can use souls to boost.
It can pay a soul to turn its gun into bone shakers instead of just regular shots.
The one that's actually infuriatingly dumb, like, from people who, A, people are already so attached to these spoilers that they just, it's like, they won't, there's no room in their heart for it to not be true.
It's
like,
not
true. They will, I know, it's not true. And the one that kills me is this argument, like, no, it makes perfect sense the way it collects souls because, like, it's really hard for it to get souls in Blindwater because so many things are undead. And then Crix players are like, really?
Really? This is the argument?
This is like, you know, because from Mark 1 to 2, the whole point was that you can't kill your own models for souls anymore. And they went so far out of their way to make that happen that why would they, like, introduce a model just because Bokers? Like, I don't know, Blindwater, it's too tough for them. Let's just make it idiotic. I mean,
yeah. Is it okay for a battle engine to be immune to single wound troopers?
And probably not. And I also, having played against it, it's more effective than any Jack or Beast, like, efficiency wise. Like, it's
because it always has 5 souls.
It generates resources and there's no risk to it, like in Fury. So it always has 5 souls. It's just so stupid.
I'm going to be devil's advocate here and just point out that nothing that you guys have said so far makes me feel like it's any better than the Menoth Battle Engine.
Soulstorm out of 5 inches.
And Arcane Vortex. It's like just a double deuce.
Wait, it has Arcane Vortex?
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, it has Arcane.
Can anyone in the world think these spoilers are true?
I know.
I have no idea.
Why does it have 2 of those? Like, Arcane Vortex and Soulstorm. And it generates D3 every turn, so it's always negating 2 spells / effing single wound infantry. Like,
what?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
It literally makes no sense. And then, if you think about it, it's FA2. So you can literally have 2 5-inch, so 2 inches off that to either direction. So these, I don't know, 7-inch.
5 plus 2 is 7.
Yeah. Well, it's 2 an inch.
Plus 5 is
12. It's an 18-inch wall.
Yes.
Plus 4 is...
But Blindwater players would be like, well, it makes sense, though, because, like, there's no reason why you shouldn't have 2, because we can't take the Gobber Tinker, so, like, it's not like we can repair it. So it's got to be kind of OP.
Yeah. Adam wants it to be true so badly.
If it comes out with even the majority of those rules... Then
it should have a gun that just shoots Epic Xerxes at people. It's just like D3 Epic Xerxes models get shot out.
That would be a new role.
That would be a new role.
That would be a new role.
Should, like, literally, I mean, yeah.
It's just, it would be better than the Protectorate engine, which we can empirically say is currently by far and away the best battle
engine. Yeah, the Protectorate engine is too good.
Yeah.
It's good. It's not too good. It doesn't break the game.
If you were to compare it to all the other ones, it's too good.
Yes, like, it is better than all the other ones, but, like, there are some
expected value for points cost from battle
right,
engines.
Right, but Crix infantry is too good.
Yeah.
But that's what makes Crix balanced.
So battle engines is what makes Menoth balanced?
It's part of the equation, yes.
I never actually see it taken.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not...
It has sort of faded from prominence.
It's not worth it, Josh.
I'm just saying, like...
I also didn't get a very good bait on the, like, earlier...
Yeah, you were in danger of a turd coming out of the toilet that we flushed. Because I find myself wanting to use this. I was mostly
trying to bait John, but it turns out I more baited just do the, Nigel, just do the, who's actually played against them.
But yeah, at the current level of the balance curve, it would be pretty analogous to the release of Epic Morvana. It's just like, it would have to be an oops.
Yeah.
It's just oops. If it comes out like that, it's just, and I can't I can't fathom.
It's less of an oops because it's minions.
Yeah.
I mean, you have...
Minions are pretty good.
You have her...
Minions have some holes in their matchups.
No, I agree, but we've also have sort of heard things like, it's minions or mercs. Who really cares? Whatever. Whatever. No one plays it. Who cares?
Lots of people play minions. I see more minions lists. I see more minions players than I see merc players by far.
I think that's true, though.
Yeah. By far.
But Gator's gonna gate.
And especially if you look at it side by side to the spoilers that we've seen for the other one.
The pig one?
It's like
the pig one looks like it might be real.
Yeah, it's right in line with the the party wagon and all the other mediocre battle engines. Doesn't really do anything.
I don't know, additional die to hit living like small piece models. That's pretty.
I mean,
actually, I don't even know it's living. It's just small piece models.
I mean, based on the actual atrociousness of the majority of their war beasts, I expect the battle engines to be better than a typical battle engine.
That could be true.
I expect them to be probably on par with the Menoth battle engine. I do.
I do just because they clearly like the COC one. I'm not looking forward to that one coming out. Like, that one looks also very good.
Right.
That one's very good.
Yeah. That one, I feel, is the closest to
what they should be.
What they should be.
Yeah.
I just don't like that they have such expensive models that have no way of boosting, and then they randomly gave, a few of them, the ability to boost. And it's just like, and then you can pretty much rank them, in terms of the most egregious ones by how frequently and how freely they can boost. And so it's like, that's why the Menoth one is at the top, because it can just boost infinite times, and it basically gives up nothing to boost, because it almost always gets repaired immediately afterwards, and it's just
if you don't have my mechanics, right.
And it's so free and easy, and it just gets crazy focus efficiency every turn effectively. And then after that, it's the convergence one, because it can kind of simulate that with where it places its little servitors, and
it
then
actually can get more efficiency than the Menoth one,
and then after that it's the circle one can boost once for a fury point, but it only generates 4 or 5 fury over the course of a game, because it only gets one a turn and it can only carry 3.
The Signar one is only really notable in the list where it comes loaded.
Yeah, and then literally
it never gets any more than those 3 power tokens.
Yeah, and then literally all the other ones, not counting the Krix one because melee
can
only
technically boost, but no.
But literally all the other ones are just completely straight F, and it's so I'm going to pay 9 points for a Warjack. I'm going to basically fill up a Warjack slot in my army and pay 9 points and a huge chunk of the table to just get a solo, essentially.
Yep.
That's really crappy.
Yeah, except that I think the space tick is actually pretty good. I've seen it on the table.
It does enough other things.
Yeah, I just think that without access to boost, it's still very strong.
It has that knockdown gun, right? A momentum gun. Yep. I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
And it has a big terrain. AOE that's a rough terrain.
And it's rat 6, and it's got a good, decent range. If the troll one couldn't be charged, and was rat 6, it'd probably be pretty legit.
Yeah.
The rat one also has kind of an underrated ability, that ability when it aims, it's in a snipe faction, well, at least with Raven, but if it aims anything that's in base, it also gets +2 inches of range, which is kind of weird, but it's, you can actually get use out of that, which I have. It's
it's a nice passive buff.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's got other things that it does too, but I'm just the troll one and the Kator one, why?
Yeah,
why the troll one, why? It's just got one AOE and one rat 5 spray, and it can't make free strikes.
Isn't the Kator one pretty good at signs importance, though? It seems like it would be.
No.
No?
It's okay. It's just the blast damage is just underwhelming, just in general. The nice thing it does is the terrain. So it's you're playing against Menoth, it's ball-bustingly amazing.
Yeah.
And then if you play against everybody else, it's ball-bustingly crappy.
If you play against Menoth and you have Iona and Holt, so it can shoot their, passage jets.
Yeah. Yep. But
which, let's not do that.
With Strakoff, so it has Sentry. So it's 2 AoEs and a 3rd. Yeah.
Or Epic Iris. He can put,
in-hospital ground. Plus, we'll extend that out.
Well, that's regular. I'm saying, Epic Iris, he can get the 2.
Artifice of
and then the Artifice.
Let's stop talking about this.
God, a regular Iris. Yeah.
So
yeah.
In Specialists.
I cannot stand the fact that they will never give Protectorate Pathfinder for their jacks. It just doesn't make any sense. What?
They have given Protector Pathfinder footage.
Okay, they have Amonadraza. Shut up. It doesn't count.
I cannot stand the fact that Privateer Press will never, ever give trolls immunity to shooting and magic for all of our Werebeasts.
Mm-hmm.
It just sucks.
You don't get
it
both.
It sucks
at the
being
same
trolls.
Time.
They did. It's called the Creelstone and the Earthborn Animus.
Oh, fair point. I think he's got you.
You can still
one.
Get Crippling Grasp. You can still get Parasited.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You got Runebreaker Animus.
That doesn't.
It's basically Pathfinder.
It's, yeah. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's basically.
Shielded.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? Minion. The Minion Battle Engine.
We're talking about Battle Engines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm okay with the them being more similar to Convergence or even the Protectorate Engine, but...
I don't think the Protectorate Engine breaks the game. It's just really good.
No,
It's still 9 points, so you're like, eh, it doesn't do anything more than a good Warjack.
We're not upset about the Protectorate Engine breaking the game. We're upset that it's so much better than
yes,
our crappy
battle. Yes, I agree. I'm just saying, like... Having other battle engines come online that are on par with a protected engine
yes.
is fine.
But well, the ultimate point I'm trying to make here is that the Gatoran, as it is currently spoiled, is not in line with the Convergence or the Protectorate engine. It is head and shoulders above them.
Yeah, it's quite bonkers. Yeah, 5 souls a turn. Just all boosting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just
making like
huge soul storms every turn.
So it can kill like 4 to you can kill a lot of infantry every turn. Like,
yeah,
every
only had oh, because of the
bone shaker.
Plus arcane vortex on a huge base.
Yeah, I mean it's
bone shaker. And
if it was just like the gun,
and it's eyeless sight too. We didn't say that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Sure.
No.
Yeah. It's on the. That's what it says. Like that's the way Adam was playing it.
There is there is one interaction I just thought of that might tone it down a little bit, and that if you actually have Soulstorm up, you can't get your D3 souls.
Yep.
So if you spend down to one,
mm-hmm.
and then have Soulstorm available to you for the next turn, then you don't get your D3, so you'll only start that turn with one soul, which...
Also, you know who screws it?
Who?
Resnick.
Huh?
Boom.
How does Resnick screw it?
He pops his feet, takes the souls.
Oh, he only gets rid of Focus of Fury.
No,
damn it.
Epic Hexer.
Epic Hexer, there we go.
There
sorry,
go.
I was in the wrong
actually,
dojo.
Also, Testament.
I'm not sure.
They can't get any off my guys.
But he can still generate
D3. Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing that pisses me off. And I can't believe, like, that the fact that this rule, like, even... we don't know that it exists, but, like, it's even spoiled. Like, I'm surprised that it wasn't spoiled on a Crix model first, because that's always been their complaint. You know,
yeah,
like,
it would enrage me, being like, wait, so all my soul-generating models that... I'm basically terrible if they don't get souls.
And they only have like a 2-inch collection range.
Yeah. And yeah.
So it's like all of your soul collectors like Epic Asphyxius just gets D3 souls every turn now.
Hey, man. Hey, man.
Because like what if the enemy doesn't bring any souls? Then it should be able to make its own. Like that's, you know, the argument they would make.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like what? Why doesn't the Wraith Engine do that? If Pistol Race did that, I would certainly always play 3 points.
Here's the answer. Because voodoo greater than necromancy, clearly.
Apparently.
Isn't it the Ark of the Covenant, basically? Isn't that what their battle engine is?
It's the sacral
it's
vault.
Sacral
vault.
The Ark of the Covenant, right?
Mm-hmm. It's like a dance platform with like a gator like, you know, getting down on top of it.
No, I thought like from the picture it was a casket full of souls.
I don't remember.
Who knows?
Yeah. I'm just saying, if it's a casket full of souls, it's going to generate its own souls.
I mean, okay, because fluff.
And obviously, the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade obviously has eyeless sight.
Because everybody ended up with being eyeless at the end of that movie. Because
it's just like pierces through melted. Everything, you know? Mm-hmm. You know?
Unless you're closing your eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure that this probably has a rule that hasn't been spoiled yet.
That's like if the models close their eyes.
If you're not facing, or if you declare that your models close their eyes, or they don't face they don't face the sacral whatever, then they can't be damaged by it.
Yeah.
You'd have just to declare that your models are closed. Yeah.
The rule would be called, we are not getting sued.
So... I'm a...
It does double damage to Nazis.
I would be willing to bet a steak dinner that the battle engine, the Sacral Vault, has spoiled.
Well, I know someone that's going to take you up on that bet.
I know.
Who is,
that's just because he wants it to be true.
Is he's like 100% certain it's going to be like this?
Yeah, he's pretty.
Why didn't anybody look at that and be like, oh, that's how it'll be?
The thing is, like, we kept talking to him about it and being like, you know, that's not going to. He's like, yeah, I know.
I know, but.
And yeah, exactly.
He just wants it to be true so bad.
Sure.
I mean, it's not that good. And.
John trying to defuse.
Yeah. No, I'm just like, I was calling back to all the discussions we had about the Menoth battle.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You're trying to defuse it.
So, Chad had you played a list buster?
I did. I list busted.
We're not going to tournament shout out for the 4-pack. It's on here.
We'll talk about it.
We'll talk about that.
We'll get to the 4-pack.
The 4-pack was actually legit. Shout out done. Continue chatting with the list buster.
Good job, Billy. Done. Good job.
So this was posted to our Facebook page quite some time ago. It was, I think, Devad Lancaster. I think, I'm not sure if I'm remembering that correctly. He posted a Jarl list that was sort of MSU style and asked me to try it out. He said he's gotten some good success with it. My worm takes forever to load, so I'm going to just see if I can remember it off the top of my head.
Oh, is this the one with the Tuflos?
Yep. So the list was, the battle group was Jarl, Runebearer, Pyre Troll, Impaler. Light battle group, but that's pretty common for Jarl because he doesn't need a lot of, you know, he needs Fury or whatever. The rest of the list was a unit of Tuffalos, a full unit of Long Riders, rather. The Sons of Bragg, two Kithkars, two Falcaller heroes, rather. One champion hero. Horthal, Janissa, and a unit of Runeshapers, and I think, and the Chronicler, and I think that's it.
So the Chronic is primarily for the Tuffalos?
And the Runeshapers, and the Sons of Bragg.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you say the battle group was again?
Pyre Troll Impaler.
Yeah.
It's a very common battle group controls.
So the one thing this list doesn't have that I would kind of like is the Creel Stone. I played a really interesting game with it. I played against Alex Grant, who was playing P. Asphyxius, and we had a really crazy game, and the one thing that I noticed was, like, it's really, this list is super, super fun, but if you are playing against someone that can get meaningful attacks back against you, like, it's really disproportionate, the amount of stuff. Like, because I felt like I was doing, like, I felt like I was killing a huge amount of stuff on my turn, and then I would be like, all right, yeah, all I'm leaving really with is, like, a couple of, you know, Blackbane's charges and a couple of Satixis Bloodwitch charges, and, like, it's going to be fine. And then, you know, with Gatsby amping up their damage with Scything Touch, I would end up losing, you know, 4 or 5 solos and just be like, oh, that was really damaging. You know, that really sucks for me, actually. But it's kind of fun because you always have a way of battling back against an infantry horde, at least, because Jarl himself is just, like, killing 4 guys a turn. And,
Did you feel like you kept equilibrium, though?
I mean, I did. But, and the thing is, like, I had the Sons of Bragg actually peel off to start scoring points. So I could have made it even, I could have probably been keeping equilibrium a little bit better if they had been sort of, more in the middle. What ended up, and I'm not, don't mean to go into a battle report here, but what ended up actually skewing the list in general was I just went for sweet magic bullets on the top of one, and or on the bottom of one. He ran forward, and I got, like, one of my best magic bullet turns ever. I killed a random Satixis Raider and magic bulleted into the sea witch, the Raider.
Before they pop their mini feet?
Before they pop their mini feet. Killed both of them. Swift hundred forward, magic bulleted again, and shot the Raider captain, the solo, on top of a hill. Killed her and magic bulleted into the Blood Witch, the Blood Hag. Killed her too. So I killed, like, 7 points of magic bullets.
How does that make you feel, Keith?
Not against me.
just hearing about it, how does it make you feel?
I'll tell you how it makes me feel.
Ashamed.
Really happy in the pants. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was basically just like, nice Satixus UAs and solos, idiot. Psh, like, get rid of those. All the Satixus everything. So that was pretty sweet. And the thing was, and then I, Swift Hunter'd back and dropped a wall and dropped my feet. And so there was just like this cloud wall in front of my entire army. So I felt like, really good. It's like, oh, yeah, I got, like Jarl is awesome. I just killed, really, really good models, like, before they popped their mini feet. Like, it's such a headache for me not having to deal with, because he also had Blackbane's Ghost Raiders in this list. So if I had to deal with the Blackbane's Ghost Raiders being incorporeal and the Blood Witches being incorporeal on the same turn, like, and I've only got one unit of Rune Shapers and Jarl that can kill them, and it's like, yeah, just, like, get rid of that. Get rid of that whole headache. That's sweet.
He also got a really good way to peel off Blackbane, too. Which
yeah. And then I backed up. And I dropped the clouds, and I was like, oh, man, I just made, like, a ton of headway, and, like, I'm literally giving him nothing now. This is awesome. Like, this, I'm in love with this list already. And the list hasn't, and I basically, the list could have been literally anything, because Jarl was the only one. Was the only one that did
like,
anything.
This Jarl list is amazing. I'm gonna play Jarl in every list.
Basically. But I had, like, this awesome, because the way it was set up, I had two long riders off to the left and two long riders off to the right, and then the long rider Kithcar was in the middle. Jarl was kind of like sitting right next to him, and then Janissa was right behind them and dropped a wall in front of them. And then everything was covered in smoke, too. There was smoke like in front of my entire army, just forming this essentially wall. And then there were two Kithcar in front of, like, sort of to either side of the wall, like just in front of, like the top right corner of the wall and just in front of the top left corner of the wall. So. Because I was kind of like unconsciously thinking about it, but not directly thinking about it. Because as soon as I ended my turn, Alex started going into the. Alex basically just like went directly into the tank, and he was like freaking out. Even though he still had a whole unit of Blackbanes and a whole unit of Satixus Raiders minus their UA and a whole unit of Blood Witches minus their UA and Asphyxius and two of his Arc Nodes and a Pistol Wraith. He still had a bunch of stuff. But he lost the stuff that he felt like was important, and so he was just like, I gotta go big or I'm gonna lose this game, So he just went into the tank and then was like, I think I gotta go for a kill, and sent the Arc Node, like, running into the clouds to Arc Four Breath of Corruptions onto Jarl, because I was only camping one, because I had to spend all my Fury Magic Bullet and boosting attacks.
That's old school right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But because of the way the Kithcars were set up, like, he couldn't get... close enough.
Four,
yeah, he couldn't get close enough.
He can get the auto deeves on him
to get the auto deeves, but he still deeved three out of the four and like left Jarl with. I ended up having to use my transfer, and he left Jarl with three hit points, and so that just like completely changed the entire scope of the game, because now I have to be deathly afraid of Gaspy and all of the Arc Nodes.
Yeah,
or just like camp two or three like every turn and not do any work.
Deviations were like super amazing. Like he killed the buffalo in the middle.
Yeah.
One Kithcar, and then did he kill Janissa or did he just?
He killed Janissa too.
Yeah. I was like, holy crap!
So he actually did about as much work back at me as I did at him, and like took my caster out of the game. But like, you can't take your caster out of the game because Jarl is so much of that list's like power, So that's why like the game was kind of interesting.
All those box just stayed there too. So
and then
you, like,
the
had
crappy
to run around
thing
it.
Was because of the way I deployed my Tuffalo, I had to promote the Kithcar to one. Side of the table, and then I was like, I got a Pathfinder these guys, but goddamn errata.
And you'd already used your feet, so
yeah.
You're like, ugh.
Yeah. So I was just like, I mean, it was just frustrating, but I was just like, oh, I guess you can't do this, I guess you just can't, like, do this formation
anymore.
Can't
do the Wings of Liberty formation.
Yeah. But, yeah, so then it was just, like, then Jarl had to back up. But, like, and I still was trying to do tons of work with him because I feel like you have to. And so eventually, like, it all sort of spiraled down. And he eventually, like, with a charge and then Hellfire was, like, just exactly close enough because it's really hard to eyeball 19 or 20 inches or whatever it is. And, but, yeah, so that's my only complaint. Like, and that's just, like, that sort of specific matchup, because I feel like any other matchup when I'm hiding behind a wall and clouds – and still camping one, probably pretty good. And then you get, like, a super sweet alpha. And then if they come into your army, like, just walking through the clouds, like, with all of the solos, with the Long Riders and all of the solos and, all and like, the Sons of Brag and the Rune Shapers, who can, like, shoot into melee, and Jarl, who can just, like, clear out guys. Like, he can clear out the tough spots for certain solos to, like, get in and do, like, the best, you know, like I was having him like clear off like two charging or two blocking guys so that my champion hero could just walk in and thresh like five Satixis at once after a long or after a fell color gives him plus two, so he's mat 10. Like it's just super sweet, like all of the
I think using
working parts.
Because I play High Reclaimer, I can see like delivering all of those solos. If you can get up the table fast enough to deliver them with one turn of Cloud Wall. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you still reduce the damage they take on the coming in.
And, I mean, you can because everything, like, they all they do is run. And everything in that list is speed, you know, 6 or speed 5. Like, most of them are speed 6. And, yeah, it's just, it's super fun. And then, like, it's like playing High Reclaimer if he had, you know, Magic Bullet and two guns.
Yeah.
But.
Instead of clouds every turn.
Yeah. And then after the clouds, you've still got Genesis to hang back and, like, leave a wall down after he, like, Magic Bullets and Swift Hunters all over the table. And so he's still usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of the audio deviating Breath of Corruption is kind of BS.
Yeah. I remember back in the day, people used to complain about P. Asphyxius a lot.
So anyway.
You would get Bach assassinated.
Yeah. So anyway, Devad, I really, really like this list a lot. I want to keep playing it. I want to try it again before I decide. I'm tempted to, you know, try some tweaking on it, but I'm going to play it a couple more times to see if it needs really any, like, major tweaking. But I like it a lot, like, right now as it is. It's really super fun. If anyone's got all of those models and you're looking for a fun troll list to play, like, I recommend it. It was some of the most fun I've had playing trolls in a long, long time.
Playing solos gets addictive.
It's, yeah. I mean, I love my Madrek solo list a lot, and this is just, like, that almost even better because Madrek is sort of boring if he's not popping his feet. He's just kind of like the orbit or the, you know, thing that all of the solos orbit around, but he himself doesn't really do much except sort of walk into place and be threatening, like, himself. But, like, Jarl himself is just, like, he's all the time, like, it's just so much fun. You're like, aim, shoot, Swift Hunter, Magic Bullet, shoot, Magic Bullet, like, it's so awesome.
I played against Jarl in the tournament, you know, with High Reclaimer, and I tried to get the guy to agree. I was like, I'll tell you what. Ashes to Ashes is going to be a disaster for your disc. How about I pretend like Ashes to Ashes doesn't exist, and you pretend like Magic Bullet doesn't exist, and we just play the game.
And he fell for it?
No, he was like, no.
Good and for him.
Yeah. I felt like that was a fair trade.
I don't know.
Ashes to Ashes did kill 5 Nis and cause them to fail a command check, so.
I mean, how many times did you cast Ashes to Ashes that game?
Once, but I killed 5 Nis.
How many times did he Magic Bullet that game?
Only twice.
Did he kill 5 points worth of models?
No. He did not.
sounds like a nightmare matchup for you.
Yeah. Magic Bullet's pretty bad for me.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. I just did some smart stuff.
Yeah. Putting down glads.
No, I
brilliant tactical play.
No, it was the 5 daughters I got on him to basically take Magic Bullet off the table for a turn because he was just like, oh crap, you know.
How does that take Magic Bullet off the table for a turn?
What's that? Because he was busy like dealing with the daughters.
Mm. He's got evasive. He can just walk out of there, just be like, ah, screw you, daughters.
Surrounded by 5 daughters. Mm. Did I tell you how he got out of that?
Genesa himself.
No,
that's what I would have done.
Nope. he was knocked down because he made his tough check after I killed him. And so his bomber walked up and bombed.
Well, then it's
Jarl.
Really easy to Genesa him.
Yeah. That seems actually
like auto hit. Sorry. Go ahead.
No. His bomber came up and tossed a bomb at Jarl because he was.
Oh, good. That's exactly what I would have done. Yeah.
Yep. He's like, I guess I transfer this back to the bomber. I'm sure the bomber's like, I don't understand. This is such a bad, like.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's exactly what I would have done.
Yeah. It was a sweet game, but yeah. Stupid Jarl. It is a nightmare matchup, by the way.
It sounds like it. You made your opponent bomb his own caster. He killed 2 things with Magic Bullet. sounds miserable.
I don't know how you've managed.
Thanks to your tactical skill and supremacy.
No,
I'll
it's
play,
not.
I'll play that terrible matchup.
All right. I actually want to talk about that.
That's fine.
Because
I think that's good. Talk about it.
We played at a tournament this weekend, and I played High Reclaimer MSU and Kraos MSU, both the lists that I'm taking to Lock and Load. And I played against 2 of what I consider to be nightmare matchups, but I'm starting to realize maybe not as bad as I first thought.
Go on.
Now,
don't let him. Just go on.
I'm interested. I'm listening.
when we talked about those lists, you guys all agreed with me that Magic Bullet would be really bad for me, yes?
You're very charismatic and persuasive.
I also don't remember agreeing to this.
You didn't think Magic Bullet was bad for the all-solo list?
I thought it was.
Yes. It is bad.
I didn't think it was bad for your version of it. It's super bad for the Sorcerer version of it.
Yes, like, that I agree with. But your High Reclaimer MSU list is a little different.
It's tougher. Yeah. It's armor 16 with 5 wounds and guys who heal and other people die and others, you know, and bastards.
Yeah, that's actually the thing and that I was...
It's also hard to get line of sight, just period.
It doesn't have these sort of linchpin solos in it. It has a lot of guys that are sort of redundant-like solos, right? As opposed to, like, the Sorcerer has guys that, like, this model is the only one that can do this effect. So if you take that effect off the game, it changes the
game.
Like,
if Aeris dies, the two-turn assassination plan goes away.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But, and then the second, I played against P. Kruger, and P. Kruger's feet and Chain Lightning are both nightmare scenarios for me.
The P. Kruger list, I agree, it sounds much worse than the Jarl list.
Yeah.
But
what I found out was my stuff is more resilient than I gave it credit for.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird when you think about how 5 HP matters to the survivability of a unit, even if it's got like low or low-ish armor. Because just there's so many random crappy shots that they can just tough through, you know.
Like, well, yeah, the paladins all just stone and mortar stanced in that game against P. Kruger, so their armor 21.
So chain lightning is literally like impossible.
And his feet.
And the feet is off 11, right?
Yeah, they're just basically dead against paladins.
Yeah. And then a really interesting interaction is the Knight's Exemplar Seneschals. He killed one with chain lightning, but he rolled 6 for the bounces. And so he killed a couple of other guys too. So he immediately healed for 2 because that's the way it works. You have to completely resolve the attack, and then anything that's killed by that attack heals him for 2, even though he took his damage already. So that actually kind of tilted that guy a little bit because he was like, it's really hard to make chain lightning work because...
Well, it still does the other 6 guys, but
yeah, it was like it. Yes, it specifically didn't kill the first guy, but it did hit.
The thing is, it did hit 5 other dudes. He only killed like 3 dudes total because he didn't do as much damage. Because you know, it like hits a paladin or you know whatever. And so his chain lightnings weren't as effective as you would have thought.
But killing 3 of your dudes is a big deal.
Except that 2 of them I ended up feeding back. So
yeah,
like
daughters or
depends on what they are.
If it was me, I would have tried to feat and chain lightning Saxon and Rupert and then Megalith because basically just like undergrowthing every turn and being super annoying like a-hole.
Yep.
Because like none of the things in that list inherently have Pathfinder, I don't think, unless the Seneschals get it when they get mad.
They don't. So that is a problem. Although
those guys are super far in the back.
They're really hard to get to.
I mean, Kruger can go a long ways. And
yeah, he can. He definitely can. But, like, against the P. Kruger guy, he felt really good because he killed a significant number of models on his feat turn. He killed a bunch of stuff. And then, actually, a really cool interaction that I hadn't seen before is he put lightning tendrils on Ram hands. And that guy's Ram is a beatback, basically.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
It's a little bit less good than beatback because you have to go directly towards, but yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, holy crap. Like, he killed a bunch of... That's what killed most of the stuff on his turn because the chain lightnings and the feet actually didn't kill as much stuff as you would have expected. But that guy got some work done. He killed 2 bastions. Well, I let him kill 2 bastions because I was like, oh, yeah, that guy dies and that guy dies. I'm like, 2 souls, and then I was planning on feeding them back. And so on my turn, I feeded back 3 Knights Exemplar and 2 bastions. And then...
Spoiler alert, sick brags coming in.
Yeah. Not really.
Humble brags.
Humble sick brags. Go ahead.
The High Reclaimer list hits hard enough that I was able to kill 4 heavies. So, in one turn, which was... I was really gratifying. I was like, wow. And that just completely swung the game. High Reclaimer's feat is really good.
Yeah. Because really, especially when you consider that a lot of the shortcomings of Knight's Exemplar and Bastions are that they have predictable sort of threat ranges, and then his feet.
Sometimes they don't get there.
Yeah.
They get there.
Sometimes.
They
so
get there twice.
And so then, like, when they kill half of the unit, and they're like, okay, well, I'm only in threat range of maybe, like, one or two other guys, and that's fine. And so it's like, so you're in threat range of two guys, and then you bring two guys back, and then for that one unit, and then you bring three more guys back, and then now they're in threat range, because you get to put them wherever you want to put them, pretty much. And, yeah, now all of a sudden there's five Weapon Masters that are in range that you didn't think were.
Yep. And then that's the other thing I want to talk about. Because of the MSU concept, you have lots of parts that have sort of different expected damages. And so, like, if I would send in a Seneschal on something and he missed one of his initial attacks, well, his expected damage goes way down, particularly if he misses the first charge because he doesn't get his chain attack and he doesn't get the charge dice. Then you're like, oh, I have to adjust my plan. Okay, well, I guess I'll send Vilmon in because he's got reach, and he's gonna like overdo the damage that I needed to do to kill that heavy. So I was always able to adjust on the fly, like to apply as much force as I needed to do. And then I have a lot of problem solvers in the list, like Nasia and Hawk in particular, because they have acrobatics. So I just usually save them for late because I can just send them to wherever like I need to apply force. And I just need a little extra push. But then it works both ways. So, like, if I spike a damage roll early, then I can be like, well, I guess I really just need to send a monk in to finish this off. And I can send my Seneschal into something else that's juicy. So you're able to adjust your plan as you go through your turn, which means you apply force way more efficiently than you normally would. If those were all units, like, I would have been able to kill two beasts, not four.
But it's like a... It was like the very first time I ever played Asphyxius at that Mayhem at Madison tournament like a million billion years ago. And I sent in like six Bane Thralls to kill a Bronzeback and killed it in like three.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that was overkill, you know. But I needed to do that because if three of them miss, you know, if two of them miss or whatever, or if your damage rolls aren't as expected as they should be. So it'd be like that if you could just sort of activate a unit like one guy at a time.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's going to go in charge. He does a bunch of damage. Next guy's going to go in charge. He does a bunch of damage. Third guy's going to go in charge. Oh, I killed it. Well, now these three other guys that I was going to send in are going to go and do other things. You know, yeah. And they're always going to get their value. They're always going to get a much higher value because you have more information, like, every time you activate something.
So, like, in this particular game, I activated my Knight's Exemplar early, and I charged into two beasts and just saw what happened. I didn't think either beast would die from those attacks, but I got to see all their damage rolls. You know, if I was normally sending in a unit and I wanted to kill a beast, like, I would have to send them all on one if I could. But that way I got to use all of their attacks to their full extent, and then I got to apply solos to finish those jobs off.
So, I mean, that's one of the core concepts that we've been talking about for this solo spam, like MSU style, right?
Yeah. but it works really well in practice, and because you're very dynamic in what you're doing during your turn.
And that sounds more like how I envisioned it, not being pure solos, but being enough of a mixture to take advantage of the increased information while not crippling yourself on having too few models on the table or too few potential attacks. Because they still have units.
I have three small units, though.
I think it's especially good in that format, or in that list, though, because especially, like, the units, just his ability to bring them, fill them back up. And so a lot of the times you have your units screening, or, like, a lot of the times just units are easier to kill than the solos are because they're, like, usually lower defensive stats and less HP.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, I don't want to waste this attack, so I'm going to send it into a guy that I know is going to die.
Yeah.
And then that's actually just kind of powering up your laser.
Yeah.
You know?
And I also make it really hard for any of my units to get totally wiped out because of blocking line of sight. So normally against somebody that brings guys back, you try to wipe out a unit at a time.
Well, that's almost impossible to do for Bastions, but
yeah,
Bastions, it's more doable for the exemplars.
But I have Rupert in the list, so I add tough checks into the mix. There are no knockdown tough checks, and then I have clouds too. So, like, I haven't had somebody completely eliminate a unit yet before I got defeat. I'm sure it's going to happen.
I mean, I would have, but you made the last tough check.
I know. I mean, that I did.
Yep.
But and then those Knights Exemplar, like, all three units are different in the way that they sort of prevent that. Those Knights Exemplar get plus one armor every time you kill one. So, like, the last one you try and kill is actually kind of a pain in the butt if you can get to it. but I like that list a lot. That High Reclaimer list, I think, is my favorite Menoth list right now.
Nice.
It's really cool. Nigel and I played a game.
Mm-hmm.
And
Final Table.
Yeah. Ocean's 18. Mm-hmm. Pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to drop him on his head so hard.
Right.
But it's like only... It's like anything you do will just make him more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah. But, so I think, I actually think the MSQ concepts work really well on that list, but just silly things happen. Just really, really silly things. Against the Jarl list, every game I played those lists, I ended up way ahead on attrition by the end of the game, except for the game against Ocean's 18. But I was sort of giving stuff away to win on scenario in that game, and then I sort of gave my feet away in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my games ended up being like 50 points killed to like 15. So it felt pretty good. So anyway, the lists are good. You should try them. They're super fun. And I think Lock and Load is going to be a good time. And hopefully I don't run into Chain Lightning and Magic Bullet. I think that's bad.
Nightmarish.
Mm-hmm. So we are gearing up for Lock and Load. With the exception of Nigel, we will all be there.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you not coming?
I didn't really plan for it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
My guess is he'll be there next year.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any new stuff that we want to see that may or may not be there?
Exigence? Okay, that probably won't be there.
Probably won't. Probably not. I think I heard Gen Con for that.
That'd be mm-hmm. great.
I want everything.
Yeah, Cadoran Arknode. I'd be happy to see that there.
Yep.
You know what I really want there to be an exigence, just as an aside, after talking to Adam? I want them to release a new contract for minions that allows you to mix pigs and gators.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I feel like they would have done that already if they had any intention of doing that.
What would the reason be not playing the old contracts?
Well, the old contracts give you benefits. So, like, the Blindwater contract, for example, gives you an extra FA, so you get 3 units of Gatorman Posse.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, 4-star is very close to play most of everything in Mercs, but you just don't get any bonuses, whereas Highborn gives you, like, advanced deploy of your solos and...
access to a few things.
Seer Forge gives you a kick in the groin.
Yeah.
That explains why so few people play Seer Forge.
Yeah.
No, actually, it's not as few as you think.
And why so many people play Highborn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be cool to see minions conceptually expand a little bit more. I'm not certain they will, just because the fluff is rigid and restrictive as far as the potential for cooperation seems low. Unless some, like, third party was like... And then, for some reason, like, the League of Monster Hunters came out and decided that pigs and gators were the most delicious things ever, and they had to band together to save themselves.
Maybe that's like, what the pirate gobbers are. Maybe they're like the minions of the League of Extraordinary Monster Hunters. The swamp or the little pirate gobbers are like the Sherpas of the swamp.
Is Alton Ashley like the king of that faction?
It's like Alton Ashley is.
It's E. Ashley.
Epic Ashley.
Epic Ashley is gonna get it done.
I don't know. I want everything. I'm spoiler hungry. I want new things to talk about and see and stuff. I think it's pretty likely that Dozer and Smig are gonna be there because they're coming out next month, I think.
I am really curious about Dozer and Smig. I'll say it that way because I have my hopes and then I have my expectations, and then I have my fears.
Yeah, me too.
And somewhere in between expectations and fears is where
the Mountain King came in.
No, that was on the far side of fear. So I'm really curious because I still hope. I still hope. I do still play Trollbloods on a rare occasion. I did at this last tournament. I took Chad and I did an army swap after the tournament before when Nick and I did an army swap, so I got to play the an epic Madrak list.
Mm-hmm.
That was complimentary. I had a good game in the first round where it was kind of a mirror match, and a couple different things didn't go as planned out, and then I kind of had a toilet a down under toilet bowl situation, if you will, that went the wrong direction.
So, does a miserable Meat Mountain mirror match become a miserable mirror match?
No, I didn't find it to be that bad.
Okay,
my miserable opponent said he was a little
Meat Mountain mirror match.
Because it sounds awful to me, but
sounds
I guess
delicious.
Mm-mm, good.
I guess the list does hit really hard. So,
yeah, I mean, people that
I mean, apparently it's whoever
game,
kills the other person's milk first wins.
That certainly helps.
I mean, that seems likely to be a big key to success.
But yeah, and then I played against Andy's Gorton or Andy's Derrigan, and Gristle managed to claw her way out of an assassination. I played against Caliban, Dan White, I think that was. And
Dan White, stop playing the bad minions. They're the good ones.
There was a lot of, and then this unit is going to charge. Dink, dink, ding, dink, dink, dink. Oh, you did 2 points to that warder. Battle-driven.
Yeah.
I mean, Caliban's got Parasite, right?
Yep, he did kill. He was the only one of my opponents to completely eliminate a unit of warders.
That's progress. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's 9 points, Chad. You've never lost that many, have you?
8 points.
8 points.
Crump killed like 20.
That was the only 8 points that were lost that game. But, and then the final round, I played against Fist of Halak, which is the epic or the Xerxes theme force with lots and lots and lots of the medium base models, and
yours are tougher.
Mine are quite a bit tougher. His potentially hit quite a bit harder.
Yeah, well, Xerxes feet.
Yeah, Fury, yeah. Super Weapon Masters, right?
Yeah.
I think there was, we talked a little bit afterwards, I think there's, he could have made a little bit better use of his upkeep spells. He kept Defender's Ward on Xerxes the entire game, so I didn't really have to contend with serious hit rolls ever. So,
although in that situation, I think you just Chronic and Fel'Kal,
yeah,
right?
You can get there.
Yeah.
And then
charge the trolls.
So I was able to power through enough of the models early that Tiberian had to commit to try to battle back through the champions, and then Mulg and the remaining champions were able to come in and deal with Tiberian. So at that point, I had like the warders engaging most of the other models, so Mulg was safe after that. And then he just got to sort of play around until everything was gone.
Yeah, Mulg is one of those pieces that, if not dealt with early, runs the table.
That whole table just sounds like a really disgusting table that I hope gets hit by a comet and all the models just get removed from the game forever. Yeah. Goodbye, Tiberian. Goodbye, Mulg. Goodbye, warders.
Citrati.
Goodbye, Defenders Warded Citrati. Yeah, pretty much. Just, yeah, get rid of that. Oh, probably a Kriya in there as well. I'm fine with that going away.
Josh, why? Why, Josh?
Actually, Brian was telling me he thought Fist of Halak was not good against Meat Mountain, but it seems to me like it would be all right.
I initially evaluated it as poor for the troll player.
Yeah.
Because my assumption was that
everything would get blown
the
up.
Toughness was comparable, at least for the models that are going to be primarily in combat. And the damage output was skewed heavily in favor of Xerxes.
Is he also slightly faster? Or are you slightly faster?
I am slightly faster because of Dash.
Okay. I didn't know if Rush on Tiberian made
it. The swing factors are that the trolls are slightly faster. Gristle's feat is in some ways a counter to Xerxes' feat. That it
takes off half of it, over half of it.
It takes off some of it. And then your Gristle's inhospitable ground is bigger.
And they have less Pathfinder to give out. Because warders usually get the Pathfinder just anyway, yeah. And then Fel'Kal can give Pathfinder, and only Xerxes can give Pathfinder.
He had a Ticom in his list.
Okay, so he can give two Pathfinders.
There's no Rush in that list?
Roughly nope. Equivalent.
No, okay.
It was just Tiberian.
Oh, Tibbers.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that could go either way. And the thing is, I think the thing that you're not taking into account is that the Zatrati are only hard to kill if they're shield walling, and if they're shield walling, they're probably not going to kill champions or warders.
That could be.
And if they charge, then they kill, great, good job, but they're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I found, is like he would start charging things, and I was like, oh, charges. Oh. And then it'd be like, ow, ow. Like, that warder took 6. This warder took 5. Like,
right.
That did hurt quite a bit. Like, this one died, but then it'd be like, bonk, 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 the Zatrati are dead.
Yeah, but then you're like, stone strength, dice off 3.
Actually, another really big advantage in that matchup is dash. Being able to walk out of free strikes and get what you want is also huge.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking, because I mean that is a mess,
especially when he can't.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That is a mess in the middle of the table where you have a huge advantage and you're just like, you don't care.
Because I was watching a bit of your first game where it was E-Gristle versus E-Gristle, and I was like, there were a couple times during your opponent's turn where I was like, God, dash is freaking annoying.
It really is.
Because you'd have, like, a champion, like, just like, ah, oh, I don't want to kill either of those warders. They're at full health. That guy's only got 2 health left. And I was like, ah, gah, free strikes, dang it.
But yeah, so against Fist of Halak, like, it can leave one warder behind to tie up a whole unit while the others go and beat on a more relevant. Like, one warder is just like, all of you stupid incendiary can't shoot anymore. So I can sing Stone Strength without any fear of repercussions.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the unit's going to go fight the weapon masters that matter, since an engaged incendiary does not matter against the Meat Mountain anymore. Like, yeah. Unengaged incendiary don't really
matter. That's because you were worried about it on the car ride up, and I wanted to argue it, but I couldn't really think of a good reason why, and I was just like, yeah, I mean, they do hit really freaking hard with Fury on his feet, and yeah, maybe it is kind of bad. But it's the same argument that, like, Nate has for, like, why he hates shock troopers and why he was pissed at me for saying that warders were bad when they first came out,
mm-hmm.
where he's just like, shock troopers are literally only good if they just, like, walk and don't do anything. And warders, like, can just do whatever the hell they want, like, charge, run, just do whatever the hell they want, and they have, like, insane defensive stats.
Yeah, they maintain the optimal amount of toughness regardless of what they do.
Yeah.
Except run out of the Creel Stone.
Have you guys ever heard that old business axiom, good, fast, cheap, pick 2?
Yes.
Warders are cheap and good. They're just not fast.
Yeah.
That's...
You heard it here first. Warder's not fast.
They're
that's why people
didn't
were
hear it here first.
That's why people were mopey about them, though, right? Because
yeah.
They're speed 4.
In Gristle, they're
primarily.
Not slow, though. They're not fast,
but they're not slow. +1 speed is. It doesn't seem like very much. It's like +1 speed.
Man, well, that first turn when your whole army gets to run and the warders run 10, like running 10 is exactly what I'm used to. Like playing Epic Asphyxius for as long as I have, like running 10 is what you do. Like that's what. Banes, mm-hmm. They run 10, and then the warders get to run, or the champions run 12, and you're like, man, that's pretty sweet.
That's exactly the same. I have the exact same reaction every time the warders run. It's like, yeah, all right, that's just feels good. This yeah. feels right. And then the champions go, and I'm like, oh, so fast! Oh my god!
And then like the
control has never run this far.
And then the Axer moves forward and rushes Mulg, and Mulg runs 10 too, and you're like, yeah.
I get a little bit of that every time I play. Tactical Arcanist Corps with Ashlyn, because the rest of the time they're like huffing it up the field like 8 inches and like walking their 4 and putting down the clouds, and then with Ashlyn they're running 12, they're moving 6. Like I'm like, I can get around all these guys. Like I can go this way and then this way and put down the cloud.
I used to feel that way when I played Fiora, because my speed 4 jacks run 10. You're just like, oh my god, this is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, go, little Vanquisher, go! No, it was go, Templar, go!
Why doesn't Epic Crystal have an escort?
Escort be pretty good in Trolls.
Instead of Arcane Mold.
Chad and I were talking on the car ride home, and this will lead into the next thing that I want to chat about briefly, about how what I want more than anything for an upcoming Troll Blood caster is another Beast caster. Because, like, right now I feel... Like,
Doomshaper?
Doomshaper is pretty much the only one that runs beasts better than he would a list with that's more infantry focused.
Can an argument be made for Kalandra?
an argument can be made for Kalandra, which is why I said better than.
Right. She's actually got that.
Can run.
She's actually got that new theme force, the evolutionary elementalism, mm-hmm. where you take
Captain
a million elemental trolls. Like most lists have like 10 or 12 elemental trolls because you get a discount on them. And
there's a lot of elemental trolls.
Yeah, and then it's just like, well, their stats are all kind of crappy, but when you just get to boost that many times, and then she can Soothing Song, like, and get, you know, a huge amount of focus efficiency, and people it looks kind of weird, and you think that it won't be good, but people have been saying that on the forums that it's really good. It's actually really good. Just, I mean, mm-hmm. I, when you think about it, like, that much fury boosting, like, yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, it's like running Repenter Spam or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take an Impaler in that list, though, right?
No.
Which, that seems like not having Far Strike for those, like the Pyre.
You've stacked up that many Light War Beasts, you wouldn't really be able to afford to Far Strike much without going real hot real fast.
Also, you probably don't need it, like, most of the time. I mean, if your entire army is just 10 Light Trolls,
yeah,
they have to run into you.
I suppose that's
true. Know?
Yeah.
And I mean, even at, was it range 8 for most of them?
All of them.
Yeah. Speed 5?
Yep.
So walk 5. It's 13 inches. It's farther than most things melee. So it's still, you still get a round of like blowing stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
So that's what I want to see. Like we've always said, Epic Madrak is so tantalizingly close mm-hmm. to being an exceptional beastcaster. He's so close.
He has Warpath.
He has Warpath and Killing Ground.
But he has no Fury management.
Pathfinder. He has no Fury management, and he's got a 5, and he's got the 10-inch controller. Yeah.
Killing Ground is such an amazing spell, and it would be such an amazing spell on a different caster. I feel like.
What does it do? I don't even know. I've never seen a cast.
The model's beginning a charge in this model's control area, gain Pathfinder, and can charge for free.
Wow, that combined with Warpath is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
What's the cost on it?
Two.
So he just can't run enough beasts to make it worthwhile because his fury count's low. Is that the deal?
Yeah. It's mostly his control radius.
It's control radius.
Control radius. Well, and troll fury management's just, whelps are so unreliable. It's just tough.
Yeah.
Against a large number of matchups, and assuming a competent opponent, they just don't work. They just don't work.
Do you have a list in mind? Because, like, I've been thinking about it. If it's worth trying to make an Epic Madrak beast list and just load up on, like, 15 whelps. Just,
I think,
like, all
also
beasts and then 15 whelps. And then just try and get, like, as much Warpath and free charges. Like, I don't know.
As an aside, I think that if you had a reach heavy besides Molg, some of those casters that maybe aren't beast casters become beast casters.
Yeah.
In some ways, like Madrak, if you had just a standard reach heavy that was like 9 points with a club, I think it would be really good.
I mean, that's the, I'm not sure it's going to happen because troll players have been begging and whining about not having a reach heavy forever, and it hasn't come yet.
And for the love of God, do not give trolls elasticity. That is not what they need.
It actually wouldn't be any good in trolls.
Yeah,
it's just bad in trolls, in fact.
Like,
does it not help the Earthborn?
It would help only the Earthborn.
I mean,
and not even really, because what has it better than Rush? Like, it is better than Rush, but it's not that much better than Rush.
It's better than Rush.
Yes, it sometimes is way better than Rush.
But then also, all of our damage buffs are also Animi.
Yeah. Yep.
So you cannot.
No, I get that, but the Earthborn damage buffs himself.
Yeah, but you frequently need a damage buff on him anyway.
It's definitely good on. It would be an animus that I would cast on the Earthborn if the Axer had both Animi. But the problem is that wouldn't be the case. It would be on, like, the Rubber Troll, which would be a pile of crap that just had elasticity. It'd be like 5 points for the two power 12s.
I'm really getting behind this Rubber Troll. I kind of want this Rubber Troll.
We call it the Trojan Troll.
Yep. So anyway, that's like my hope and dream, is another Beastcaster.
So what would a Beastcaster look like? I mean, there's some obvious.
He'd probably have like spikes on his shoulders, like those spine things that the trolls grow. And then he'd probably be like blue skinned. It might actually be a girl though, so
actually
significantly different.
Yeah, they don't have spikes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in Mark 1, I wanted them to make like a Karchev troll. Like it was actually like a mauler with a brain or whatever, but yeah, I just never. The Gunnbjorn's kind of a cool I don't know. I've had some fun games with him as a beast caster. Because you just take all the ranged beasts and you just sort of load up.
I mean, Guided Fire is really good.
Yeah, it's like you take two Pyre Trolls, two Impalers, two Blitzers, and then like a Slag Troll, Winter Troll, and whatever. And you just like go to town. And you've got two walls and, you know, all that going on.
Yeah, Gunbjorn is one of the ones that's potentially a better beast caster than he is an infantry caster. The problem with Gunbjorn then is he a better anything caster?
Well, he's got just a Devastate gun when I'm playing it. That's pretty sweet.
When you're playing it,
that's true.
It just devastates.
His gun just had devastation. That'd be pretty sweet.
Nigel's crit devastate weapons all just have devastate.
I don't know what you'd be looking at as far as rules-wise, because there are so many casters that are right on the verge of being excellent beast casters.
What about Escort? I think Escort was Escort something we mentioned would, earlier would be really good.
Escort would be phenomenal. Mobility.
Mobility.
I mean, here's the thing, though.
What about synergy?
Like, it's not just...
I think that's okay.
No, it's not. Synergy will never happen.
It's not just another beast caster. You need a beast caster that makes you, like, want to take them instead of taking Doomshaper, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, I mean,
that's not hard. Have a beast caster that's better than 1315, and I'm like, rejoice!
All right.
1315's bad.
I mean, honestly, if they just...
1317.
They gave him some beast support and made him Fury 7, I think you have a beast caster, right?
Right. Some significant Fury control is kind of what the caster would have to have. And I'm not sure that there's an example that you can point to on a caster with exceptional Fury control. Because, like, I'm not sure Soothing Song is enough. Like, if Soothing Song was enough, we might have seen Kalandra with a more heavy loadout than we have in the past. Because that's only going to pull, like, 3 or 4 Fury a turn.
Yeah.
Well, my problem with Kalandra and to an extent Doomshaper has always been, like, yeah, they have the Fury 7. But, like, apparently the troll tax for having Fury 7 is that your defensive stats are garbage.
Yeah, great. They total to 28, which is the worst.
In a faction known for having exceptionally good defensive stats across the board. And so every time I play Kalandra, I end up playing Kalandra, it's always, you know, like, oh, I can leech so much, you can leech back so much more Fury than any of the other casters.
She's
got such a higher Fury stat. But I have to camp 3 or 4 to feel safe. So I actually can't, you know, whereas like Madrak, I'll frequently be like, camp 0. Reach back 5. That's fine.
I need to army swap with Chad and have him play Protectorate for like 6 months, and then he'll play them and be like, "Oh man, I can drop down to 1 Fury. This is totally this is totally safe."
Yep.
So yeah, I just hope maybe I don't know what Bearco would have to be.
What other spells would be really good for
batten down the hatches?
That's not happening.
New armor buffs.
It would make a good troll. It'll make a good Warbeast caster.
Yeah, it would make the best Warbeast caster in the game. Instantaneously.
I mean, we would look back on Miserable Meat Mountain as cute.
It's so easy to crack. Like, you couldn't even take that anymore because of all the armor cracking that exists in the meta now. Meat Mountain is unplayably laughable. Like, it's so squishy.
Armor 23.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Oh my gosh, bad.
It's not armor 23, right? It's armor 26 or something like
that. That's what Batten had that.
Right.
But
yeah,
Batten
I was
talking about the meat.
Oh,
meat
bomb. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, armor 23. Adorable.
Yeah. Okay.
We only play casters that have damage buffs and weapon masters available to them.
Yeah.
Circle of Legion don't get played
if there's
anymore.
A troll
you're saying like the meta would like instantaneously like 100% shift to just nothing but like weapon masters.
Trolls and cricks.
And POW 20.
It's just trolls and cricks. That's all that's left.
Yeah.
It's just...
If
we're going to play rock, paper. Actually, rock, scissor.
Maybe Xerxes would survive in some small way. But, I mean, all the cricks would crush him, so...
If there's ever a mulg that Gorton's Earthbreaker cannot kill in a single round, I'm quitting the game.
I mean, it probably can't kill Epic Gristle's mulg, right?
Yeah, it can.
Number 25?
So dice -1, 5 attacks, all boosted.
Yeah,
it's dead. That's dead.
Yeah, that's pretty dead.
I mean, sure.
So armor 26 is that much worse, is, you know.
I mean, it's dice minus two now. I don't like dice minus two when I'm POW 24. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
But it would still kill it.
It would.
So you're okay with it.
And free boost.
I guess I wouldn't quit the game.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the deal. Here's the
Josh seal of approval.
It would kill it on average, but at dice minus two, it gets into the realm where you might not kill him often enough. Where you would have that experience enough where you would quit the game.
That's exactly
right. Yeah, you average 40 damage.
The experience actually only has to happen one time. It only has to happen one time.
I had the Avatar fail to kill a Gorax once.
Yeah, that's the Avatar. It's not POW 24 tuned up Earthbreaker.
POW 21 Avatar to an armor 16 Gorax. Mm-hmm.
Did you roll 4 focus?
I don't remember.
Probably 2.
I think I rolled 3. I think
I rolled some snake eyes to hit.
Twice, 3 times.
Well, there you go.
Something crazy.
It was the Avatar. Do that. The Avatar's
no damage.
The Avatar's garbage.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, nobody takes him anymore, anyways.
That's true.
Oh man.
If he could get Pathfinder, I'd play him again.
Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit of dojo. Which
I can give
him
a Pathfinder.
There was a transition for this like 10 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
Because we were talking about Gristle, who has dash, and this caster also has dash.
Oh.
That's my
who could it be?
Ryas?
Is there anybody else that has dash?
So the Kador AIDS is flaring up a little bit that Nigel gave me.
Please don't sit next to me.
It'll go away. But I was like, so assuming I'm playing...
Josh, it's only a problem if you swap bodily fluids.
Oh, okay.
I did drink from your Coke earlier.
Josh is just a carrier. He plays a lot of Four Star Syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's true.
So I was thinking about a potential match pair for P. Sorsha being a character hog in some variety, whether or not it be exactly Ocean's 18 or something in that vein. So mostly a Hordes drop, kind of a generalist as well, since the Sorsha list is mostly general. You don't want to end up skewing things too badly. So I was looking at Vlad 3 and trying to optimize, just make a list that's very playable with him. So I was avoiding the Theme Force, because the Theme Force is one of those weird lists that... It sort of either has it or it doesn't from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that list a few different times, and it's sort of got its one that like blitzes at you, and it's like, did we get there? Nope. All right, it didn't happen. So things that Vlad has that we're taking advantage of, dash, a lot of things in Kador that you can consider dashing.
Yep.
The Winter Guard Death Star is a good option. Doom Reavers are an excellent option. I like Iron Fang Pikemen.
The Winter Guard Death Star is kind of funny to me, because every time I've seen the Death Star engaged, the back ones just unengage the front ones, and the front ones shoot whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dash is still good, don't get me wrong, but...
Unengaging with the Winter Guard... Oh, you're talking about just taking, like, solid shot with the bad guys then?
No, they take sprays.
You can spray in a way that they don't clip. Like,
you can.
Sprays,
it can be tricky depending on how the setup is.
But, like, it's so narrow. A lot of times if you just kind of walk just out of melee range, it's too narrow to actually clip the Winter Guard's thing right next to it.
Sure.
But, like,
then you
dashing away
strange,
is still...
bunched up formation.
Yeah. The nice thing about dash, though, is that those guys who are engaged walk laterally. Like, they disengage and walk laterally, and they're spraying across the form. I mean, they really get everybody dead.
Super money spray.
Yeah.
Also, thinking eliminated. Anytime you can eliminate thinking from the process of having to play your turn gives you more time.
Yeah, just Wolverine it up. Off and Wolverine it up.
And then I was looking at his feat, which is sprint and sidestep for the cavalry models and the warjacks. And I kind of wanted to make an army that could disengage as much of it as possible. So I was looking at anything else you can get that can disengage. Is basically just the one unit I found that fit the bill was the IFP with the original unit attachment.
Because
under dash, which persists, they can charge 10, right? Yeah, 10, reach 2, and then back up 7 and go into shield wall at that point.
Yep.
So that's pretty neat. And then Fenris can go in and carve stuff up and get out. The... Dracoon can do the same and get into a cool counter-charging position.
If you have the Iron Fang Kovnik, too, like they also get that 9-inch shield wall move, which is kind of just like the House Guard.
Before the thing got released.
Right. Because they also have Desperate Base.
Now it's 11-13 with Osian.
Yeah, that's stupid.
And then, so I've got the IFB in there. I've got a min unit of Grey Lord Outriders just for infantry control, as well as... Because I ended up not putting the Windergard Death Star in. I thought about it, but...
It's also, Outriders are really good with Hand of Fate.
Yep. And he's
and
got
Hand speed of Fate. 10 with speed dash. 10. So speed 10, Pathfinder, Hand of Fate, sprays that can shoot engaged.
If they have dash 2, they can walk through.
Yeah, and then they can light cav, and like that seems amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Wait, did they get dash during the light cav move?
I would assume so.
No, light cav move is a static 5.
Yeah, no. but you're still immune to free strikes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it's still their activation.
Gross.
Yeah, as long as they're in his control area.
Which is hard to do with them, actually.
Mm-hmm. Although he's kind of man mode a lot of the time. He can be pretty up in the business.
Mm-hmm.
He has Infernal Machine?
Yep, Infernal Machine. The Warjack that I was leaning towards was the Spriggan, because it's got reach, so it can do some work and then still sprint back 6 on the feet turn. Nigel, you suggested Torch, because you've got hard on for Torch at present.
Yeah, Torch Boner. He's just so good. the other thing, too...
Torch is what? Is it like the torch clap? Does clap give you a burning sensation?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just like torch does?
He's just hot for torch.
So you're kind of thinking about using sidestep and the sprint to back up.
Yeah.
The other option is you can
jam in.
And so torch, I feel like, is
and
a
I mean,
good...
If you've got a raging boner from torch, you might as well jam it in.
Yeah. The other torch also makes it dumb Nigel math proof. Like, a lot of times in the games where I played, I'm like, all right, I've got, like, with the Spriggan or something, or Beast of Nine, I've got, like, X-inch threat, and I'm just including reach in that, and then I'm like, and then 2 sidesteps, so I'll get them. But when you get there, you're actually 2 inches shorter, even though your reach is your initial target, so when you sidestep twice, you're just not there. You're like, son of a bitch, what happened? And you, like, redo the math, like, oh, that's right, I don't run to where my reach is. Like, crap. So Torch Nigel proofs that whole process, right? Just like, he goes, he's got a 12-inch threat or whatever it is, and then or a 9.5-inch threat, and then he has 2 sidesteps, and then that's what his threat is, and then you get.
Mm-hmm. So you just add the reach in twice when you have his break in.
Yep.
Well, the other, you get to sidestep to some pretty nice sprays, I would imagine.
And then the sprays, that 5, he's a virtuoso gunfighter, and that spray is really effective, like when you get it places.
I think ultimately the tipping point with why I might try Torch if I were to play this list is that the smoke cloud would be very handy too. He follows Vlad around making smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using it in my Strakoff list. Sometimes I have turns, I'm like, God damn it, I got a 10-point Jack who's just like walking backwards 6 and because he's got superiority on him. Mm-hmm. And he'll just put a smoke cloud. It's like game busting. Like it's amazing because he also is a big fat butt who can't be seen through. So he increases sort of the size of the cloud.
Yeah, he makes like a bunker all by himself.
Yeah,
he is a mobile bunker.
Yeah, and then that for your casters.
You just have to watch out for slams.
Yeah, especially a big butt caster like Vlad, where he's a large base, that actually effectively kind of hides him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a lot of value out of that, actually.
So actually, Vlad can't be knocked down from a slam. No, yeah, it's equal base, right? So he can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind.
And then I just put the stuff that's good in there. I've got Epic Iris, Widowmakers, and... I put Kayazi Assassins in because my thought process was they're good with dash. I mean, they're parry already, but
increasing their threat range is nice, particularly on their many feet turn.
Yeah, when they're the acrobatic turn when they can really get in there, and they're also the turn that you back the army off, jamming the Kayazis in can be effective. Because with the exception of the Iron Fang Pikemen, everything can back off, and then you can do other things. So you can sort of like pick stuff off. To get the Kazi.
Yeah, well, you can also do the reverse play, as John was saying. Don't use it to back out, just jam with all of that stuff, and then have the Kayazi who now run 14 inches, so they're right behind all of it. And so they're, you know, it's the classic sort of Kayazi thing where you usually get jammed and you've got one turn to extricate them or die because they'll just pop their mini feet. Well, this is the same. They're behind a wall of just like meat that they have to, they'll kill everything.
Yep, so the things I like about the list is it's got varying plays. Vlad provides both effective accuracy and damage increase with the same spell.
Mm-hmm.
You've got infantry removal in spades. Most of it doubles as can do damage to heavy. So it's a very versatile list.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I was thinking about putting a Beast 09 on Malakov in that list. I mean, I know you have to take out quite a bit to get him, but he seems like he would be really good to like Thresher, and then you can either sidestep backwards and then back up, so you like get to charge, you get to alpha with Beast twice.
Yeah,
pretty good.
It's kind of like he's a stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just a thought.
A stalker that's like always primaled.
Also, like red line on
shot off the table.
Red line on Beast 09 is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Is bananas for sure.
Yeah, he's a mean machine.
And the other thing you can do is that's kind of nice is you can kind of get in there, and then you know, maybe you're dinged up or whatever, but you come back and then you still have, when you play multiple jacks, and it makes sense to put a min pack of mechanics in there, and so it kind of allows you to play that game a little bit too.
Well, Beast 09 is 11.
Yep.
So yeah.
14, potentially 16 points. So the Kazi is 10.
I said it's tough. So it's just a thought I had. I don't know if it's any good, but I like Malakov Beast, so I always try to shoehorn him in an Oxalis.
Yeah.
And then if a caster makes it even better, then sweet.
Lakazi and the Outriders and try that.
How far does Beast go? He's 6, 9, 11.
Yep.
11 inches of threat, and then he comes back 6.
Or 8 with a sidestep?
Potentially. He's not getting a lot of value at that point. Just one hit, but sometimes one hit's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
you could also theoretically dig in deep with like two sidesteps forward, and
yeah, you could charge with the fist, sidestep forward, then Thresher. Is that legal?
No, Thresher's
no, Thresher requires you to give up all your initials.
Yeah,
well, that sucks.
But I mean, he can just Thresher, so you can like cleave a unit out. The only thing that sucks is he's not. I mean, he's got the imprint that also. Well, actually, if you're doing the backup thing too, yeah, he just imprints and then cleaves. I mean,
charge Thresher, back it up.
Yeah,
there's sidestep back.
Yep.
Yeah, the other thing he can do is he can sort of, it's like the mini Morten Ebra trick: charge Thresher, sidestep, kill two more dudes. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I don't think like, for example, the Meat Mountain would like to, you know, it's like POW 21 Thresher, and then have it back up 8, like and then have Kazi run in front of that or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be pretty annoying.
Yeah.
And then he gets to do it again.
Yep.
That seems pretty good. And then it also sort of makes Malakov, it's a little bit less of a risk investment, because when you do Alpha Beast in, you have to move Malakov forward to be able to allocate to him next turn, or you either risk Malakov by moving him forward or concede that you're not going to be able to allocate the next turn. But if he's backing up, like mm-hmm. Malakov can be in a much safer spot.
And Vlad provides wind wall for him to hide in as well.
That's pretty good.
And then he can shunt any magical shots that come in onto Vlad.
So he
still has to worry about spells.
He can be in wind wall and behind Vlad and Torch's bunker. So
it's a reasonably safe position.
You're protecting Malakov with your caster.
Yeah. Why not?
I mean, the kind of attacks that are threatening to him are oftentimes not threatening to a caster.
True.
And what you would lose if you lose him is often similar to losing your caster.
True.
I mean, you pretty much, if you lose your...
In Kador, anyway.
If you lose your junior before you get to make maximum effective, not even maximum, like good effective use of your 11-point jack, I mean, you pretty much lost the game.
Yeah.
That's a pretty... Because you just lost 14 points. It's hard to overcome a 14-point
loss.
How
often do you play 35 points against 50 points, and you're like,
That's why I love him with Strakhov, is he's just a great occultationic target. It's just like, oh, thank God. I don't have to worry about that.
Although, Nathan was telling me how much he loves playing his Iron Mother double Axiom list against any junior, because he's just like, feedback, dead.
Gone. Just gone.
Well, then you would occultate Beast 09.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, with Strakhov. Yeah.
Which means he's not redlined, which kind of sucks.
He could be redlined just before he goes in.
Yeah. And he's only getting 2 focus.
True. Yeah. True.
But, I mean, it's better than him just getting blown off the table with backs.
Fair. Fair point. It's
better than 5 elimination servitors rolling up and 14 points going away. It's like, what do I need to hit Beast of Nine? Oh, a three? All right, we got this.
Yeah, five elimination servers running up. Like, well, I actually got to be, you gotta be careful, because he's got hyper-aggressive.
Oh.
But still, yeah, he's probably dead.
But yes.
Still well, those elimination like servers.
One damage to Malakov?
Remember that the elimination
one damage to Malakov?
All activate separately.
They're all solos.
Yeah.
So that hyper aggressive.
So
that's
going
to be a real weird situation.
One walks.
Aggressive matters.
One walks straight to the left and shoots him, and so Beast 09 shambles to the left, and the other one walks to the right and shoots him, and then he shuffles back to the right. And,
And then he's gotten too close, and the rest of them charge him because they're gunfighters, I think.
Mm-hmm. They are.
There's literally no way.
Yeah. Malakov is very dead.
Just going to have a bad time.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
No.
Yeah. So the way it goes is, this one's going to shoot Beast 09. I do 1 point to Malakov. Next one's going to shoot 1 point to Malakov. Wait, hold on. Hold on. We need to call him here. No. No, we don't.
Actually, it's actually BS that they suffer from feedback and backlash because they're not actually warcasters. It's in the rules. They're not actually warcasters. They, mm-hmm. shouldn't suffer from it.
Do they actually suffer from it, then, if they're not warcasters?
I assume so. I assume it says controller of the warjack.
Yeah, it's controller, is what it says. Jack Marshals do not suffer damage.
Wait, so what's the exact wording on it?
Yeah, and actually, now I'm kind of curious.
Controlling warcaster. Oh, my God. Are we going to break new ground here?
Yeah.
There's probably some.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's Nathan, so whenever Nathan talks about a rule, it's usually like
I'm going forth to prove Nathan to confirm Nathan's correctness, not with any expectation of him.
We're all hoping he's wrong because that sucks.
Yeah, I don't want to speak in absolutes, but I pretty much assume Nathan is 100% correct because I've never had anything he's told me been proven wrong,
right?
Ever in the 4 years that I've known him.
As far as rules go, he says tons of wrong stuff.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't know
how to
play.
Really wrong.
He does not know how to play War Machine, but I still love the guy.
Backlash. It's controller. And controller is a game term that...
It does not apply to Jack Marshals, apparently.
Leader. Yeah. I think controller equates to leader of a battle group.
Cool.
Wah, wah.
Oh, man. Satixus Raiders.
Yep.
Such a boner. That's just not fair. You got these new shiny toys, you can't even play with them.
Life isn't fair.
I know. Well, actually...
Maybe Jack Marshals do take damage from what? There's got to be a reason why they don't.
Are they not a controller?
Question mark?
They're a Marshal.
Anyway.
They got a shiny tin badge and everything.
So yeah, I feel like Vlad 3 has been... He kind of fell off the map after the Butcher 3 came out, because in a lot of ways, Butcher 3 is like, I'm everything that you wish you were, Vlad 3. Like, I do all the crazy stuff without having to have lots of living dudes to bounce off of to get sweet. Like, I just start super sweet.
Mm-hmm. Am I the only one that doesn't like Butcher 3?
Yes.
Hmm. But Vlad...
I'm off him.
Vlad has a couple things that are... Like, their feats are comparably... They do a... I say probably a comparable amount.
Yeah.
Butcher's has more probably personal effect, because his is usually regain my camp. Like, don't die. Like, I went in and now I get to not die. But the most it will do is allow him to, like, scoot and pull again, which can kill some infantry, which is what Vlad's is going to accomplish. It's going to kill some infantry by letting Fenris really go nuts and letting Vlad get in there himself and sometimes establish some power in a camp, which can leave him threatening for the next turn, which is a lot of it. So their feats will, the outcomes can be very similar. So then it's more looking at what the caster does for the rest of the list. Vlad obviously has a smaller effect on the total table with his personal threat than the Butcher does, but he also, through Hand of Fate, dash, and the other aspect of his feat has more of an effect on the army. So I think the casters might be closer in power level than like recent showings.
Here's what I don't like about Butcher 3. Literally every game with him is kill enough stuff with him so that the Counter-Strike can't kill him, but your opponent can still dice you. That's what I see.
I mean, that's not news to me that Terminus has existed for quite a long time.
Yeah. I mean, he's more dynamic and more fun than Terminus, and he does more things, and I understand he's got all these bells and whistles, but ultimately, your game plan is to give your opponent a shot of sucking out on the river, and that will happen.
Yeah. I mean, he is kind of... His play style is sort of the epitome of what everybody wants War Machine to be when they first start, though. Because when you first...
Yeah, they want their hero to go do stuff.
Yeah, when you get sold on the pitch, you're like... And your army is led by this, like, ultra-powerful warrior wizard that can just, like, get in there and, like, mess everything up.
This is Severus.
But if they die, you lose the game.
Like,
oh, man, that's so hardcore.
My ultimate powerful warrior wizard. Yeah. I've been waiting for his POW 9 knife attacks to come out.
And then you realize that the relevant part of that statement was not... how much they can do, but the relevant part of that statement was if they die, you lose the game.
Yep.
So,
I mean, that's just my opinion. Does anybody disagree?
Not necessarily. No.
I don't disagree with your statement that your opponent can then dice you. I just, like, I'm not sure how many games I've played that my opponent hasn't had, like, a 15%, 20% assassination at some point during the game. Like, so I don't see it as significantly relevant over another, like, a different caster.
I play a lot of games where my opponents never get an assassination. Like, they do now because I'm playing Kreos and High Reclaimer, who are both, like, up in the business. But I've played a ton of games where I've played, like, Sevi, for example, and they've just never gotten a shot at my caster.
So you think you've played games where your opponent had literally 0% chance to kill your caster on any game?
That was the Menoth style like 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I played lots of games like that.
Severus' wheelhouse used to be like 3 inches of the table.
Yeah.
Like
table. Killbox was invented because of people like me.
Okay. Yeah.
And Brian.
I mean, it's easier when your casters have...
It was Brian that I always... Like, 14, 16-inch control areas, but yeah.
Yeah, well, 16-inch control area and 14-14.
Sure.
So...
Sure.
Yeah, so I've played plenty of games where they had zero chance to assassinate.
Okay.
So have I. I play Epic Asphyxius.
Yeah. I find that to be... Yeah.
So have I. I play Epic Madrak.
Okay. Now we're being a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, a little bit. And I'm not...
No.
I still think Butcher 3 is a powerful caster, and I still think he's fine. It might just be a playstyle thing, but for me, that's not the game I want to play. I don't want to put my caster... at risk like he does.
I mean, you play High Reclaimer, your caster is technically at risk on a regular basis.
A lot of times he's not. Sometimes I make a mistake and I end up exposing him more than I wanted to, but a lot of times he's like, you guys have all seen me do this, I'll put two or three clouds directly around him and he's pretty much not at risk behind a bastion wall.
All I know is that
Striker 3 has killed me 3 times.
Striker
2 has killed me 3 times.
If your opponent puts down Striker 2, it's apparently just like an auto loss. You apparently give him 100% assassination.
Well, Striker 2's assassination, in fairness, is extremely difficult to stop when you have to put your caster in the middle of the table.
Right. So you're playing a caster whose style of play requires that you give some of your opponents a pretty good chance to kill you.
But I think Butcher 3 gives way more...
But it's not his game plan. I think the argument that he's making is that it's not his game plan. He will try and he tries and prevent it any way he possibly can. And sometimes he succeeds, and most of the time he probably doesn't because it's really hard to. Whereas Butcher's actual game plan is
Butcher
to go
Terminus.
Into the middle of the table, spend all of his focus, and then regain it and camp and just hope that he lives.
Butcher
I don't
and Terminus.
Know that I agree that that's his game plan.
I don't know if a little bit more. And it's just... what degree they do so is debatable, and let's not get caught up in that. I mean, that's where all arguments with John get stuck.
But my point is that's
where... In degrees of gray. Okay. So he doesn't like casters that stick their chin out that much. Terminus and Butcher are 100% the most chin-sticking-outy casters in the game.
When Butcher came out, though, it immediately killed Vlad for me because Butcher... The nice thing is that... Because Vlad also does it a little bit, and one of the problems I have with him is he gets in his own way a lot. Like... On turns, Vlad will have like these like god turns like lined up for him where he'll cast dash. He'll probably have to put Hand of Fate on himself, and then he flashing blades, and then he'll like feet, He's got to, like, waste half his focus just getting going, and then he goes in there, like, flashing blades, and then he, like, sidesteps and flashing blades, and then, because the idea is you're just trying to, like, rack up blood quenched.
Yep.
Because he gets, like, super boss if he does that, but it's just,
he's
like...
to the point where he's sitting on, like, a 12 camp.
Yeah.
No focus on him.
Yeah, it's amazing. But, like, just setting it up is just so focused and efficient sometimes that he just has, like, oh, no, now I'm just stuck here. You know, like, so I can sprint back a little bit
it's
or whatever.
Like, if you had a Scarlactic cast, like, Hand of Fate on him, and then you had, like, a Hierophant to, like, yeah, reduce the cost of dash by one.
Yeah.
So that he could get going with just one instead of four.
Yeah, whereas Butcher, he just, like, I just charge, I energize her, I pull everybody in, I thresh her a couple times, and then I'm going to feat and do it again, and then camp four or something and still be pretty badass. Like, he just is more he works, he gets around his own crap.
Yeah, his execution is a lot less fiddly than Vlad's.
Yeah.
It requires less preparation. Or if you choose, because you can do, Vlad can go in without those things. It's just that if he does so, he's at greater risk.
Yep.
Like there's a chance he might fail, because he's what, Matt 7? Is he Matt 8?
I think he's 7. So Hand of Fate really helps with his flashing blades, because you don't want to boost any of these attacks if you can help it. No. It just gets, it's a.
Yeah, Matt 7.
Toilet bowl.
Again, that might be just a playstyle thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but. Yeah. But I just hear everybody say that, like, I hear often that people think that I think Butcher 3 is the best Cotter caster. Like, I've heard that a few times.
No, yeah. I don't agree with that statement.
Yeah.
But I like him. I think he's very good.
He's neat.
The other problem with Butcher
is good.
Like, where I'm back now, where I think Vlad 3 might be better than Butcher, is that Butcher does have just auto losses. Like, straight up, I don't know how he could beat Krios. I know for a fact he'll never beat Peace Orsha against a moderately decent player. Like, he's just got matchups that are just terrible. Whereas Vlad, not necessarily.
I feel like Vlad is more of a generalist, where Butcher pushes the same idea to the point of being askew.
Yeah. Why is Vlad different? Just because of Windwall?
Because he can play the game back.
Yeah, Hand of Fate dash allows him to just be back. He can just be a support guy until it's time to go kick some butt, which is what you would do with Krios. Butcher cannot change his game plan. He's stuck. He's like,
if he doesn't go into the middle of
the
table.
Yeah, he can hand out Silence of Death. But against Krios, who cares, or against Sorcerer, who cares, you know, like, and that's his only thing he's doing for his army. Whereas, like, yeah, Vlad is pretty badass.
Hand of Fate and dash.
Yeah.
All right.
I know, and that's actually what started my sour train on Butcher, was the game where I played Sorcerer 1 against Butcher 3, and it was, and this is no disrespect to my opponent, but it was the least stressful thing that I did at TumbleCon, because there was nothing he could do. Like, he couldn't stop it, and he couldn't.
Yeah, I played Epic to Negra against Nigel, and it was just like, nah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Pursuit, like, and game over.
Yeah, like, the Negra lands Pursuit on a dog, and it's like, oh, balls. Like, you know, you can't get her anymore.
Yeah, you literally can't get her.
She can stand on a flag, like, 3 inches from Butcher, and just be like...
Didn't they?
They ratted it, so now I can gain 3 inches on her with Energizer every
turn. Wait, why can't... Can't the dog sack its movement while the rest of the unit charges?
It's model unit.
It's model unit.
Pursuit is model unit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Then that explains it. I thought it was just model.
Yep.
If the Negra's within charge range of Butcher already, she can be got. But if she's outside of 10 inches of him, GG. You know?
I'm on that same quest.
Yeah, when you've got a 14-inch control radius.
Yeah.
I'm on the same quest that Keith is on, which is I want to find a second list for Sorcha. Sorcha, playing Sorcha at TempleCon is the most fun I've had playing War Machine in forever.
I'm actually excited.
I think Sorcha is the best caster in Kador. I think it's not close.
Yeah. I want to see Keith play the 18 list. Like, I want to see other people who have just better games than me, like, play it. Because it's like, I know it's really good. And I basically just went on accident. I, like, roll around and do whatever. But, like,
you beat Father Lucant this weekend.
Yeah. He deserved it.
Shooting.
Yeah, with shooting. I just
shot that guy dead.
Yeah, with all POW 12 solos. Between POW 10 and 12. I mean, he did take the two behemoth shots. That probably hurt. But, but, yeah.
I don't even know how that happens. Like, his jacks are steady, so you can't tempest him out of the way. Like, poor Nathan.
Sorcha makes it happen.
She does. That's why I like her. You just can't stop her.
I don't know. I've never lost her.
Son of a bitch.
I know. We can go, like... For the third time, because you were much better the second time than the third time.
Yep.
High Reclaimer sort of ties you in a knot, and you have to, like, figure out how to play against it. So,
I've got enough muscle memory on it now. I think I can start peeling those onions.
So yeah, I just wanted to get that dojo out there to sort of...
Yeah.
So I can get
I actually think that lad list would be fine. I think it'd be good.
I like it. I might take out the Kayazis.
See, now that... Who was... I was having this conversation with someone. It may have been Kapke. Or it may... No, it was Cool Kurt. And we were talking about... I was like, huh, you don't really see Kayazi anymore. And he was like... And I was like, I don't understand that. I was like, well, they got pretty thoroughly solved for a while. Like, everyone was bringing blast damage and whatnot. And but it's just... And his point was that the unit is so self-sufficient, and it does what it does, and it's powerful in its own right, that it's just, like, a lot of times...
I just take Eliminators, though. Like, that's the nice thing. Is like, an Eliminators with Dash are bonkers. Like, they run 16... And then their defense 17, like, they're just better Kayazis, and they don't have a mini feat. They just always work. I mean, you just don't get one killed, and they're fantastic. Actually, even the one by itself is fine. And that's actually at the price point. 2 for 3, it's a 1.5. It's less than a solo for 2 solos.
And then they have 5 wounds, so a lot of times blast damage won't get them.
So it's like, if you want to diversify your portfolio, you could take a unit of them, and then you could take a 5-point. You could take, like, Epic Alexia or something else and still get...
So there's options to switch it up, but I think Kayazi are still good, and they're still worth taking. Yeah. They've completely disappeared. I haven't seen them in I don't know how long, other than Kurt, and seems strange.
Josh,
I don't think they've been that thoroughly solved.
I was just going to comment on Eliminators, but I think you got most of it. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And they have Sidestep, too, so they actually added that part of the list.
Yeah, the only thing about them that I sometimes regret is that, unlike the other Kayazi, they just forgot how to backstab. And
Yeah.
I mean, the only other thing in the Vlad 3 list is they're not as good a Hand of Fate targets. Like, putting Hand of Fate on a unit of Kayazi Assassins, the full unit, is
pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Money in the bank. But
Vlad wants to have as many viable targets for Hand of Fate as possible. And while it is, it's not nothing to put it on 2 Eliminators, especially if they have something like juicy to go get. It's not as good as throwing it on the Kayazi Assassins the turn when, after you've screened them with the rest of your army, and they get to just go in and every single one of them lands their attacks.
Hey guys, I need a third list for Masters at Lock and Load if I make it.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any thoughts? Like, I'm really drawing a blank.
Get someone to borrow you some, like, 5 Paladins. Play Harvey.
We can't, because he's got Paladins in his Reclaimer list. He's got Milli Vanilli.
I'm not willing to give them up out of the Reclaimer list. They do too much.
I wouldn't either.
Wait, what?
If you wanted to play the Harbinger theme force. You need Vilmon. You need Vilmonster for it.
Oh, okay.
Vilmon's a character.
Yeah, you need Vilmon in both lists.
They don't have Impervious Wall without Vilmon, and then they're not as good.
I didn't know that. I don't know how they work, because no one ever plays.
Vilmon is the only one that has Impervious Wall, and then he has Elite Cadre Paladins and gives that to them whenever he's taken.
Yeah.
So they normally only have Stun and Mortar. What about...
Classic P7, you turd. Just get dust off P7 and just play a good old-fashioned Aya Menoth douchery list.
Just play your...
I was going to say Epic Sevi.
Epic Fiora list.
Yeah. You can dust off Fiora.
I was thinking about that, updating the Fiora list. Adding the Bastion Seneschal seems to make that list a lot better, I think.
I was going to say Epic Sevi, and then you can, like, counter-douche people that are playing High Reclaimer against you. And I still think he's got game against Meat Mountain, because you can just take over, like, a million. You can take over all of the guys, and I guess they don't run very far. Nah, never mind.
Yeah, because they immediately get bogged down in...
In hospital ground.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, actually.
Well,
the way that whole interaction works.
Looks like you need to take Am on them.
Yep.
Well, here's the things I was considering. I considered Fiora, too. Uh-huh. I considered Amon Adraza. I actually did consider that. Not going to lie. I considered P-Sev.
Resnick, too.
No, I didn't consider Resnick,
too. That's good.
I have no experience with him.
Yeah.
So wouldn't be the first time I did that. But I probably need to play something that I have some muscle memory on. So, like Fiora or Sev probably is the right
Fiora
answer.
Fiora or Severius seem like the most obvious. You also probably have some muscle memory with Harbinger.
A little. A little. But...
Can you say Martyr?
I can.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Actually, that's right, but the Covenant's not in this new list either. Gosh, it's so hard being Menoth. You can't take the Covenant in every list.
First world problems. I know. Yeah, and I can't take the Covenant out of the high reclaimer list. I feel like I lose a ton there too. So
it's you just lose to Ocean's 18.
You certainly would.
100%.
Or is it just like, oh, thank her. Just like pokes her head into the clouds like, hey.
Yeah.
Yep,
that's one matchup where Orin Midwinter does not create the same effect.
No. Not even close.
What about... Yeah, so Severius and Fiora seem like the most obvious potentials. You could go with Johnny Resnick the first and just try to drop him. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this is where Masters were talking, so it's not the qualifying heat where you can be like, hey, round one, I'm going to assassinate this guy.
Maybe I'll pull the Templar out of retirement with Fiora. The problem is I just have to – there's so many really bad matchups now. There's so much more inhospitable ground and stuff like that running around. I just seen a lot more of it, and that just ends Fiora.
Yeah, but it's three lists, so you're just plugging it into your good matchup.
Yeah. Yep. Also, the game has kind of changed since I played that list.
Can Fiora just is she an auto drop against Legion?
Pretty close.
Nah, it gets really hard. Like Veil 2 is really hard.
Mm. But if she, because you're immune to just all their fire garbage, right? And then if you've got a Devout, you can't be spelled. Your caster can almost just run off the table.
Hero list didn't have a Devout, but yeah, you definitely slot that in if you're worried about that.
Yeah.
It's not the.
I'm just saying, because Everblight's prevalent enough that you could reliably throw that down.
I get off it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. And without the book, that's the other thing, too. I don't know if I can play Fiora without the book.
And Inquire, no shooting? So then they need to hand out that stupid. You're forcing them to have to make magic attacks.
No, but I mean, they out threat me on the charge. So, Angels come in and kill a heavy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then she can cycle refuge, so they both get away.
I thought your whole point is you shoot them, though. You just, flare.
No, that list abused Enliven.
Yeah, that was a different kind of list.
Okay. I thought it was a shooting list.
I could go back to, a Menoff gun line.
I think the meta is a little bit better for it this year than it was last year. Actually, I like that. That's the idea I like best so far from the ones I've heard.
I could do that with Sevi or Fiora.
Sevi or Fiora.
I could put two Knights Exemplar Seneschals and then play a gun line and just be like, run into the zone! Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's three guaranteed turns of, or two guaranteed turns of.
Yep.
Scenario, so don't score a point.
Fascinating.
Yeah, unless they slam or something.
Unless you have telekinesis or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yo, or two-handed throw. That's happened to me. But. Yeah, I don't know. I was just trying to get in the tank because I forgot that it was three list masters. So I built these two lists. I love them. I don't want to take anything out of them, but there's not a lot left over. You're like, ugh.
Yep, not a lot left over. The Avatar. You still have the Avatar.
No book. I just don't get excited about playing the Avatar without the book because every time I play it without the book, some jackass knocks it down and then it just dies.
Yeah, that's a common problem.
But I mean, Armor 23 Avatar is still pretty hard to kill.
This is true. There's also a lot more purification. The Defender's Ward is not what it used to be.
Guns. I say go guns. Probably with Fiora. She's harder to get rid of.
She is harder to get rid of, and there's more kill box.
So if you end up being like, oh, this is the person that I want to play guns against, but it's a kill box scenario, prevents that from happening.
True.
So I would go, your Fiora, double Vanquisher. Is it double Vanquisher, double... Or one Reckoner, one Redeemer. Was that it?
No, it was double Vanquisher, double Reckoner, Redeemer.
Yeah, throw a Devout in there. Boom.
No, I had Zealots in there.
Yeah, you want the Zealots.
Still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't like it.
I don't know if it's still good in the meta, though. I'm not sure. I have no experience in playing it in today's meta, where things are faster. The meta is faster, and there's more anti-shooting in the meta, it feels like.
Yeah, I suppose that list predated the Colossal. You haven't played it really since those came out.
Mm-hmm. I can't really, like, I can't drop it against Haley 2, which was with the Stormwall. I used to play that list against Haley 2 all the time before they had Stormwalls. But now I'm like, not so good.
It's a little more questionable.
Well, because I can't shoot a Stormwall off the table.
No.
With Decel and everything else, so I don't know.
You used to brag about how you always shot Stormwalls off the table.
I did.
It's more of a Krios thing.
Yeah, because I could purify off Arcane Shield,
mm-hmm.
and then I usually harmed it, and then like Zealots did a lot of the work.
You could play a...
Is Epic Eris in any of your current lists? She's not, right?
She's in the Krios list, but I could switch Pieris into that slot and probably be better. Served.
I thought you were running Harris 1. Oh, no, you
were. I don't know the model. But I just bought it, so I do have it.
The other option would be you could play the same sort of gunline idea with Harbinger.
Yeah. Or PSEV.
PSEV can't purify, but the Harbinger can.
That's true. I could play Jack Heavy Harbinger.
Go Sam Lamb style?
Just go like feet and just shoot stuff.
Yeah. Keeps them off you.
Yep.
So it gives you an advantage over the faster stuff that's come to bear, like might
desperate pace to Texas Raiders.
Yep. Or the House Guard.
Yeah.
If Retribution shows up in the Masters. I mean, we can talk about this for a while, but what's ultimately going to happen is you're going to play in the qualifier. You'll most likely qualify. You'll learn who else is qualified, and you'll tear down at least one, possibly all three of your lists, and rebuild them for Masters the night before. So, do we really need to finish this conversation?
I mean...
Because I'm just going to be up all Friday night listening to you rebuild your lists.
You have to admit that usually they come out to be a pretty stroke of genius.
That is 100% true.
It's not 100% going to happen. It's only like a 98.9% certainty. Like, I don't feel like it's 100%.
They probably still play one of the Krios or High Reclaimer lists in a recognizable form.
Maybe.
I think you will.
I don't think I'm changing that High Reclaimer list.
I'm going to give him that.
All right.
Like, the Krios list could change, and it wouldn't hurt me too much, although I love playing it.
Uh-huh.
The High Reclaimer list is the most fun I've had playing Protectorate in forever.
Mm-hmm. Right up until you're like, oh, my God, I just got this great idea based on what I know I'm going to be playing against.
Now, I don't know how you can say that, because you and I have literally never had that conversation.
I mean, I've sat around and listened to you have that conversation with these two.
You have?
Yeah.
He was there last Icon.
Oh, yeah, that was actually a particularly egregious time when I did that.
He was also there at TempoCon.
Yep.
Yep.
I did that with Nigel, didn't I?
That was Jeremy
Lee. And me. And it turns out I was the other person in that room.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that.
And you were still going when I got back.
He's such a D-bag.
Why am I the D-bag?
So I think that about does it for us this week. Tune in to the post-amble, pre-ramble for us yakking about movies.
Also, cool. Spoilers, we talk about Dresden. No, we didn't.
But actually, spoilers, we do spoil stuff about both X-Men and
Winter Soldier,
so don't listen if you actually care about spoilers for those movies.
If you haven't seen those movies yet, I don't know what rock.
Or if you like Wolverine, don't listen if you like
Wolverine. No, you absolutely should listen if you like Wolverine, and then you should feel bad about your life.
Josh, I'm disappointed.
So as you are listening to this, we are enjoying life in Seattle. If you're at Lock and Load, come say hi. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, there's some potential that we may not have an episode next week.
Yeah, we might be.
Nigel, you're not going to run an episode while we're
going? Oh, this will be me and Colin. We'll be sweet.
Yeah.
I really want to hear this episode.
Stay tuned next week for me
and
Colin.
Actually, you guys,
fireside chat.
You should bring in the Miami crew and just sit in for us. Mm-hmm. And then you could all impersonate us. It'd be fun.
That'd be hilarious.
I don't sanction this.
I want to know who's going to impersonate me. If it's going to be Crump.
Well, let's see. Who's the most sour a-hole on Miami?
Crump.
Yeah, probably. Or it could be Adam if he's riled up about Minions. Like, I feel like he could get into that frame of mind to actually do you. Like right before the cast, they just said, hey, Adam, did you know Minions are not a faction? And then yeah. He could Hulk out, and then he'd be you.
Fox is Chad.
Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
So Colin's John.
Yep. That makes me Lance me, I guess.
Yep. And then Nigel will be Nigel.
Nigel will have to still be Nigel.
That's no fun. Nigel should get to play a role.
Nigel could probably mimic John pretty well.
I think Nigel should be Keith,
and then Lance
can be Nigel.
I'll play Colin. So that
play Colin.
It's totally meta like this.
I like it.
Now I'm in. Anyway. What's new on the store, gentlemen? Well,
before we do that, no pirate joke? Really?
All right. I have one, but it's
great.
Yeah.
You actually do have one? This is so disappointing. I legit thought that you didn't have one, and I was going to be like, segment dead.
Yeah, it's not dead. Okay, so this is a story joke. So there's a captain, and...
There be a captain.
And he's a brave captain. And he's out fighting pirates like them brave captains do. And he see off in the distance a pirate ship. And his crow, or whoever, who's the guy in the crow's nest? His lookout. His lookout shouts, "There be a pirate ship on the horizon."
Why is the lookout a pirate?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that this captain wasn't a pirate captain.
This is not a pirate captain.
Okay.
This is a guy that hunts pirates. This is a pirate hunter. That's why I didn't start with it. Okay. But I guess I'm telling it in the story of the victorious pirates. So, okay. So the lookout says, "Avast, there be a pirate ship." And the captain says, "Bring me my red shirt."
No, you're really going to tell the joke off Game of Thrones?
This is actually... Yeah, I'm going to tell the joke off of Game of Thrones. You asked for this.
It is an old joke, though.
Yeah, it is an old joke. And the crew looks to him, and he dons his red shirt, and they leap into the fray, and he kills many a pirate that day. That dirty, dirty, dirty captain. So they go along sailing a few days later.
Foreshadowing, really?
And the lookout cries out, "Captain, there'll be two pirate ships off the bow." And the captain says, "Bring me my red shirt." And the crew looks at him, and they say, "Captain, why do you always call for your red shirt when the pirates are approaching?" And he says, "It's so that I can wade into battle, and no matter how many times I get cut and bleed, you, my loyal crewmen, won't see it, and you'll know to fight on, and you won't fear." And they were all in awe of their brave, brave captain. And so when the two pirate ships came, they fought him off again valiantly, with the captain leading the way in his bright red shirt. And then the next day, the lookout cried, "Captain, there'll be 10 pirate ships on the horizon." And the crew, they all turn to the captain, and they wait quietly for him to call for his red shirt. And the captain turns and he says, "First mate, bring me my brown pants." A yar.
I get it.
Colin. Come on.
I wasn't going to tell it. This is actually John's fault.
Yeah.
I think I was right. Segment dead.
No, you brought it back.
He brought it back, unfortunately.
You brought it back.
No.
And the reality is...
Now we're going to put up a poll, and we'll say, do you want pirate jokes?
Sure. Do you guys want pirate jokes? John hates them. Let us know on the forums. As always, vote your conscience.
Callbacks.
I hate my life so much right now. How does this always happen to me? I'm the plucky hero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's new on the store, plucky hero?
Everblight should be up. It will have already been up by the time this comes out, and then Minions will be right around the corner. They're done. They're just, we got to get them to the store. So Minions might be Friday, maybe?
Friday at the earliest, Monday at the latest?
Yeah, something like that.
So when do Cephalix come out?
As soon as the book comes out.
Yep.
I'm going to text you the list of tokens we need for Cephalix from Lock and Load.
And he wants you to airmail them overnight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In case I need to play Exelon Thexis in the Masters. Yeah.
Are they going to be in the standard mercenary theme, or are you going to get crazy?
And I think I'll have to just do it as a separate bit. Like, it'll just be...
Yeah.
Oh,
but they're just going to all be pirate hats, so... You know, technically, they are mercenaries, so...
Fantastic.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, you're not going to redesign for them?
He was making a joke. Oh, my
tongue
God.
Tongue in cheek. Gotcha. Tongue in cheek.
Well, half of them are going to be pirate hats, and the other half are going to be dicks.
Yeah.
Because if you redesigned for them but didn't do anything different for Searforge, that would make me personally very happy.
Uh-huh. Why are we doing this?
Actually, I just wanted to have, like, Subflex would be even the funniest, like, version of it, though. Like, having to put a pirate hat down next to whatever the heck their monstrosities are called. Like, yarr! You be get a buff from my gister. It'd be so awesome.
Pirate jokes forever.
Captain Thexus.
So yarr. With all the faction sets currently or nearly released, what's mm-hmm. what's next?
Status effects,
wound markers,
wound trackers for like units, and a big one for casters, and then
SR 2014.
Yep, 2014 packs. We're figuring out a way to
we may
do
wait
smoke
on
rings
SR 2015.
And stuff. Yeah,
very cool.
Do you think we should do charge templates?
People are like requesting it, so you know. But we'll be developing stuff every week. It'll be awesome. Yeah, but status effects will be the next thing after full color double-sided status effects. You'll have
more
like
new stuff's on the way. We're not done. Keep an eye on the store, and I'm sure we'll announce anything new here. Keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter during Lock and Load. We've got at least one reporter who will be there on the scene. And
Michael Chili Winners will be there on the scene, and then we are working to provide tournament coverage on the Muse site, too. So.
Like
hopefully.
In video form?
We won't be doing any videos, although we will be doing videos at DICOM, so we will be picking up some of that.
Mm. Just not at Lock and Load, but as much as we can reporting on standings and outcomes.
Yeah, we're gonna gather that information and
some
and
lists as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. This has been Keith.
Josh. Yarr.
Nigel.
And John.
And Chad.
There was already an and. We're done here.
No.
Oh, here, I thought there was going to be a let's blow John. God, why does Crump always fizz board up so much?
He's a sound engineer.
Is that a legitimate question?
How do people not complain, like, nonstop about your sound, Colin?
I actually have only checked out two Muse on Miami's threads, and one of them was complaining about the sound. So, based on my experience, 50% of the time their sound is awful.
50%.
50%.
Test, test, test. Pre-ramble.
Yes, it is.
Okay, you were talking
to us. Vaginas, penises, John is dumb.
That's his.
That's the pre-ramble.
That's his, like, you know, like the thing that actors do. That's like your vocal warm-up.
Yeah, it's my vocal warm-up.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I don't mind. You can call me fat. Do you really have to call me dumb? That one hurts a little bit.
John is fat.
And dumb.
And dumb.
It's like, you're right, I forgot that you're fat.
Yeah.
I really don't think I'm dumb.
Well, few dumb people do think that they are.
All right.
I mean, does anyone think that they're dumb?
Yeah, some people. Some people know they're dumb.
That's like a Wolverine. Strange wisdom in that.
Wolverine knows he's very dumb. And he's just like, I don't care. I'm going to stay dumb. F you, learning.
Dude, we talked about this, though, remember? It's like, because Wolverine's like, he's like a fantasy elf.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, uh-huh. He just lives for so long.
Remember, and I abdicated the right to, like, ever use that trope again. Because I hate Wolverine.
It's like you were okay with it until I pointed it out.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's, you know, it's totally fine. The Tokens elves are like, they move kind of like slow or whatever. And then you're like, well, then Wolverine's just like them. And I'm like, well, then nope, that's not okay.
Because like an 80-year-old elf, you know, is like an 8-year-old child. And you're like, how do they, like, what were you doing in that 80 years? Like, how do you not learn something in 80 years?
Exactly.
Because elves?
They Wolverine. Do learn. They just maybe don't, they don't mature.
Like Wolverine.
He neither learns nor matures.
Yeah. I mean, he's
so
an elf.
You're not okay with elves anymore? That's what's coming?
I mean, let's be honest. What were my exact words at the beginning of Thor 2 when they were like, and the Dark Elves. I was just immediately I looked at Keaton. I was just like, I'm out. F this movie.
Yeah.
Also, everyone who said Thor 2 is not bad on the boards is a terrorist.
Yep.
There were only like two of them.
Well, yeah, a movie terrorist, like literally sowing seeds of discord by getting like they're committing psychological warfare on America.
Exactly. They're like, no, really, go see Thor 2, and it's just like, no, because that both encourages Hollywood to make more Thor 2s and also, like, destroys the people that go to see it. So, it's terrorism. It's an act of terrorism.
No, I agree. I can't even go on the forums when it's about movies anymore.
Two of a two's gonna be fun. If you just turn your brain off, eat the popcorn, get good to movie.
That's a pretty good John impression.
Yeah.
I don't think I've said one time that I thought TMNT was going to be fine.
I mean, I haven't had enough discussion.
I'm just wondering, like, why is it like, why is everybody clamoring to turn their brain off all the time? Like, holy crap. Can't you just do heroin and not see a crappy movie? Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ.
Like, honestly, what are most of you doing on a daily basis that your brain is so exhausted that you need this, like, 2 hours of no brain time?
Yeah.
I think if I can just put a voice of reason to the other side of this.
I don't think you can. Go ahead and try.
But yeah.
A lot of the standards that you guys hold Hollywood stories to, like, real-life stories don't meet those standards because people are not as rational as you guys all want to hold the standards to. Like, nobody would ever do that. Well, yeah, there are people that would do that. There are people that are literally that irrational.
No, there is nobody that would spend the gross GDP of every third world nation on a vehicle that has a pop-up Gatling gun in the center of it. No one would do that because they would get fired. They would get immediately fired.
You do realize he
no
works.
No one has ever done that.
He works. You do realize he works for a government agency.
Yeah, he would be immediately fired. That car was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
But it had a sweet propulsion system.
Yeah, it was called the Wheels Movie. much as many other cars do.
So Josh and I saw Winter Soldier. And
Winter Soldier was a very good movie.
I don't know.
False. That is a false statement.
That is a true statement.
I don't know what it was, but like I'd heard so many good things about it that yeah. I must have gone ahead with unreasonably high expectations.
Well, I did expect it to be good because I liked the first Captain America movie, and then everyone was like, Winter Soldier's like, it's good. It was really good. It was really good.
And it started off really good.
Yeah, the opening sequence was sweet. Captain America laid some smackdown. That was an awesome opening.
The stuff on the boat.
Yeah, the stuff on the boat was awesome. But, yeah.
And then subsequently, so good things first. We'll say some good things, and then we can share what we didn't like.
Okay.
And then we can...
The guy that plays Captain America does a really good job.
Yep.
Okay, can we do the bad things now?
So pretty much any part that had Chris Evans in it was good.
It was pretty... I mean... Not entirely. Like, he was around while some, like, really absurd stuff. Like,
he is. Like,
Dr. Zolas, or whatever his name is, committing suicide for some random reason after, like, spending...
Well, he probably has himself backed up somewhere.
No, because they specifically... You said that at the time, and then they cut to Robert Redford being like, well, we lost Dr. Zolas, but it was worth it because we bombed the hell out of Captain America.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he does. He's like, it cost us Doctor whatever his name is.
Maybe my brain just blanked that out because that's so dumb.
Yeah, it was super dumb. It was super dumb.
And so we were saying good things, Josh, good things. But yeah. So
You guys are trying too hard to be haters.
And the backbone of the story was solid.
Yeah, the conspiracy was really good. Like, I wanted a movie about the conspiracy and about Captain America dealing with, like, the struggle between, like, a free state that's not safe and a controlled state that is safe and, like, you know, what it means for American freedom and, like, everything that he stands for to, like, figure out which way to go on that. Like, that movie would have been really good.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing.
It sounds incredible.
And, like, the 3 points in the movie when you're like, oh, they're trying to do a story about this. You're like, you get pretty excited. And then Samuel L. Jackson is just like,
and then
I'm not dead.
Or Hydra Hawkeye comes in.
Yeah, stupid Hydra Hawkeye.
But yeah, so there was like two or maybe three scenes that didn't need to exist that could have allowed that story to take place.
Yeah.
Instead of having the conspiracy just explained to them for no functional reason to distract them.
Yeah. The $2.5 trillion automobile chase scene, like that one, we didn't need that. We didn't need any of that. Samuel L. Jackson could have just shown up at his house and been like, look, you're Captain America, so if I'm going to trust anyone, obviously it's you. And here's the deal, there's a mole. And then he gets
ka-bang!
Shot.
Yeah. And you're like, ah!
And then you're like, no, Samuel L. Jackson, you're dead, kind of.
And then he kept his lightsaber, apparently, from Star Wars.
yeah, which he used to cut through 3 feet of solid earth. Yeah.
Right.
I hated that so much.
That explains it perfectly. Yeah. Like, I couldn't figure out what he used.
Yeah. He kept the Star Wars lightsaber.
Yeah, that actually.
He showed up on set. I was like, hey, I still got this. Can I use it? Let's write it in. You are Mace Windu.
The most boring Jedi Master. Yeah.
I'm actually more okay with it being Mace Windu's lightsaber than with the actuality of what the story wanted me to believe in that situation, which is that he has some sort of pocket antimatter ray.
It was basically like the mega Costco version of James Bond's laser watch. Yeah. That can very slowly cut through metal.
Right, but this can cut through literally anything.
Very quickly.
Extremely quickly.
I think that's the problem with editing. As they like, he gets in a car accident, he's kind of groggy in the back seat, and then the guys are like getting the guns and run up to the van, and he's gone. You're like, what?
No, it's literally just the Winter Soldier walking towards him.
Yeah.
So unless
I also feel like they have crazy equipment that they don't have to explain.
But can't you see, like, the sparks coming out from under the van? Like, when you see, like, what's all that activity under there?
It's perfectly silent and perfectly, like...
I agree that I expect, like, crazy gadgets in comic books, but, like, this one, like, goes too far beyond the bounds of believability. Like, I'm okay with Falcon's, like, flight suit, even though, like, that's also ridiculous, but...
I mean,
this.
I feel like Falcon is ridiculous for a different reason, but we can.
Well, it's because Marvel has a, like ethnic diversity, like, quotient, apparently, that they're trying to meet by pairing every, like, stereotypical white superhero with a black sidekick for some reason.
Thor? No, we talked about that.
Idris Elba.
That's not really a sidekick, though.
Yeah, that's true. Falcon just... I actually liked... Okay, so talking about good stuff, I actually really liked the guy that played Falcon. I liked that character, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the character was good.
I know he bothered you, but I liked him.
I liked Falcon until he was the Falcon. Like, I liked it when he was just, like, some old veteran that was, like, jogging and, like, complaining and stuff. And then when he put on that stupid suit and stuff, I was like,
I was in the same boat.
That really sucks.
Wait, what's crappy Iron Man doing here? Like,
yeah, but, I mean, why is Iron Man okay and Falcon not... Just because you think Iron Man's cooler?
No. He means that Iron Man exists, so there's no need for Falcon.
That doesn't mean necessarily. That doesn't preclude, like, things that are not Apple from being invented.
No, I agree. And also, I just think Iron Man has panic attacks and Falcon doesn't. That's clearly delineated within. So Iron Man's.
So there are situations.
Iron Man's great weakness of panic attack, like, then he's, like, stepped in for by War Machine. And if War Machine is also having a panic attack, then it's then it's time for Falcon.
For Falcon.
Yeah.
I'm just saying other things get developed, and they may not be as powerful as Iron Man, but that doesn't mean there's not a place for them in the world.
It's like the Pete Holmes X-Men thing when he's, like, berating
Angel.
And he's just like, do you know how many X-Men fly in addition to the other things they do? You're a bird.
All you are is a bird.
That's why they updated Angel.
Did they?
They made him into Archangel.
Does he do other stuff?
No, he's still just a bird.
Yeah.
No.
His wings metal blades metal. Out of his wings.
His wings became metal, and then they fire blades out of him. And I mean, he's pretty. Yeah. He's a lot cooler character. Yeah. But
so yeah, Captain America. Everything that involves Chris Evans, pretty sweet. The fight scenes were all really good.
Yeah. Really well choreographed.
The initial fight scene is probably one, like, on the boat is probably one of my favorite, like, movie hero, like, or superhero movie, like, fight scenes that I've ever seen.
Somehow they made shield throwing not look retarded.
It looked amazing. And yeah. He was
and real.
Brutally murdering those guys on like, they were 100% dead.
Oh, back to the point. For some reason, I forgot to mention. Back to the point about gadgets. Like, normally, I expect a lot of gadgets in superhero movies. Like, Batman's all about gadgets. Mm-hmm. When involving Captain America, though, like, Captain America just doesn't seem like a gadget-associated superhero.
It's not, but they weren't associated with him. They were associated with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I know. Just them being in the, like, when I'm in Captain America.
Well, Captain America didn't even really use any gadgets. No.
Yeah, that was my point.
Yeah. I think that's fine. It's fine for Nick Fury to use gadgets, just not ones that, like...
Just not Mace Windu's lightsaber?
Just not Mace Windu's lightsaber. Which we know from watching the crappy Star Wars movies and seeing Liam Neeson trying to cut his way out of a poison gas room, that even Mace Windu's lightsaber would not have cut that hole as quickly as it happened in... Like, it was a portal gun. He had a portal gun, I guess, but not even really that, because I don't know what it was. It's an Earthbreaker torpedo.
It was like a D&D item, a magical item, where you can, like, put a hole on an object, and then it just, like, makes a hole through it.
Yeah.
Portable
hole?
Yeah, portable hole.
It was a portable hole, apparently.
Why not just aim that at the Winter Soldier?
Seems like a good idea.
Just go to that one away.
Like, just wait till the Winter Soldier, like, reaches down to pull you out from under the wreck where he can't see you and just be like, bam, right on your chest,
buddy. I'm going to cut a manhole-sized hole through you.
So you didn't like Winter Soldier then?
I actually enjoyed it, but I've seen I, Frankenstein and
Warm Bodies.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayers. Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. But yeah, there was a few moments in there that I was like, but...
Yeah, I don't like Dr. Zoller committing suicide after immediately revealing the entirety of the conspiracy.
I thought he was so cool, though. So it's like, they always give you like something super cool, and then they sort of
they just took it away.
Yeah,
it was like here's something so cool, but it's gone now.
It was like I went, like it just like,
we didn't get to discover this. It was just like.
It was so rage-inducing because, first of all, it was like, here's this, like, high-level conspiracy. And I immediately was like, that is a really cool conspiracy and a very believable conspiracy. And they just, like, they just gave it, like, up. Like, you know, he didn't have to investigate it.
Well, also, just part of that, the plan to, if his plan was to, like, leave them enough clues so that they find him, why does he need to call it in as like a bunker busting airstrike? Why would he just have the bombs in there?
Well,
with
this
him?
Is the other thing then, is that he spent just himself he up. Spent like he does this like soliloquy about how he's like saved his own like life because he just couldn't give up on himself and like he wasn't ready to die and his body was outdated and he went to all this work and he backed up his mind and all his memories and yada 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 all for this one moment when I could reveal this conspiracy and immediately commit suicide.
Yeah,
like, like what?
But maybe his life's work was done. The conspiracy was popped at that point. I mean,
but it wasn't because Captain America stopped it.
No.
That's the point of the movie, is that Captain America stops the conspiracy.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, Hydra had taken over S.H.I.E.L.D. at that point.
Yeah.
And they were, like, he thought they had won.
That wasn't Hydra's goal.
Zoloft thought they had won at that point.
Oh, I wish his name was Zoloft. That'd be sweet.
Zoloft.
That would explain a lot.
Zoloft.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
it's not... I don't know.
So is that how you feel about your life? Like, you're like, you'll do the thing that, like, you've wanted to do the most, and then you'll just jump off a bridge because...
Well, he's like a bee. He stings you, and then he dies.
Okay.
I mean...
Like, yay, my life's work has come to fruition.
If I really wanted to get into it with you, I could say things like, maybe his life as a computer wasn't very fulfilling, and he just had this one thing driving him, and once it was done, the conspiracy was done, he didn't need to be around.
Like, there's no computer ladies for him to get down with, so he's just like...
You don't think that's not plausible?
It's plausible. I think that if that's what you're going to do, you need to, like, incorporate
again,
that into
the
storyline. Again,
I think you're holding all these standards that are, like, your own narrative that you're adding to things that...
No, you're the one that's adding. You're adding in a whole backstory about how Zoloft is like...
I'm just... What I'm saying is...
Just it doesn't cure depression. And my backstory is...
You're saying he wouldn't do it.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
I guess I just disagree. Like, I feel like you guys are reaching really hard to find reasons to hate it.
All right. Well, in the forums, does it make sense
for Dr.
Zoloft to kill himself?
You're going to get blown up on this, right? You realize this? People are going to blow you up for hating Winter Soldier.
So keep in mind that John really wants John Damaris. Fat Asian. Really wants you to blow me up on the forums. So, you know.
Do it. Do what you think is best.
Do what your conscience dictates.
So, yeah, everything doesn't maybe add up perfectly in the movie, but almost no movies reach that.
It was not Thor 2.
It was not Thor 2.
It was not Iron Man 3. It was better than those.
I agree. It was certainly not as good as the movie we saw after.
No. Then we went and saw X-Men. And X-Men was quite good, despite being...
X-Men was surprisingly good.
Despite being loaded to bear with Wolverine.
Way too much Wolverine.
But he wasn't the primary focus.
But he managed to sort of fade out of the screen a lot of the time. You could just sort of ignore him.
Like, right up there, every time I started to, like, kind of forget that Wolverine was involved, he always had that, like, tap on the screen moment where he's just like, hey, I'm Wolverine. I'm pretty sweet. And then everyone around him would, like, turn and look at him and be like, you are pretty sweet. You are pretty sweet.
I don't know.
Have any of you read after we saw the movie, like, the Anna Paquin scenes that got cut?
Uh-uh.
Does anyone understand that part of the plot? So the plot, Ellen Page gets cut by Wolverine because he kind of wakes up. And
yeah, he wakes up and freaks out.
Yeah, freaks out.
She's sending his
we should put a spoiler alert or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
spoiler
that
alert. This. So she's, like, going to not make it. She's going to basically die if they don't, like, take her off X-Men or, you know, Wolverine duty. So they have to go rescue Rogue, and she's in some sort of, like, Sentinel prison. And so Magneto and Xavier basically do, like, a two-man super op. It's basically like a buddy cop movie with like two geriatric dudes.
I would have seen that.
Well, no, this is. I'm actually glad they cut this, because then they save her, and then Rogue comes out, and then she steals Ellen Page's power, and then continues the duty, and then Ellen Page goes and sits by a dish.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that would have just been so stupid. Like, it just would have been like.
I'm glad they cut that. Also,
yeah, I would have been bitching about that.
Anna Paquin could not have pulled that off. You'd have just been like, ugh.
No, I don't like her at all, but I just wanted to see the buddy cop.
I'm glad they exactly. I'm glad they cut that, because that is stupid, but I do really want to see like Magneto and X-Men like teaming up. Like, that would be sweet. Like,
yeah.
And them doing like a raid on a Sentinel prison sounds awesome.
It's just like, it's that nerd fantasy. Like, hey, man, the two most powerful X-Men like getting together.
That was literally the Bryan Singer and then the guy who wrote it. That's like, they wrote it just to do that. That's because we want these two guys having like a last hurrah, because they didn't think they'd have those two actors on for much more of this series. So like, we just
they may die
this
at any moment.
Yeah. So it's going to be when the DVD comes out, they're going to have that scene in there. But it is interesting that they wrote it specifically to have those two old guys running around, and then they realized it was just stupid and superfluous to the plot.
This is really stupid. Yeah. This is really dumb.
But it's like, thank God, because like, Lucas never would have done that. He would have digitally added a third character.
It'd have been Jar Jar Binks.
It needs more lens flares and explosions and like animals that fart. Like, why is there an animal farting in front of Tatooine now?
But yeah, X-Men was quite good. Quicksilver's cameo
was pretty awesome. Although, as we've discussed, established that he can never be in anything like, he can never be like there when the X-Men are trying to do something like serious and hard, because he'll just like he'll easy button it.
Half of them.
He's going to be
though.
In the next
Magneto and Xavier almost do that.
He's going to be in the next Avengers movie apparently.
Yeah.
It's a different actor,
right?
But the character they apparently like Marvel worked out a thing with.
I enjoyed the actor that they used for Quicksilver. I thought
the guy from American Horror Story.
Only one of the two companies gets to call him Quicksilver. Which one is it?
No, they both call him Quicksilver. But from what I heard, I think that they both get to call him Quicksilver. But Marvel can make absolutely no reference to him being a mutant or having mutant powers, and Fox can make no reference to like him being an Avenger, basically.
So he's a miracle. Is that why they did that miracle thing?
It's completely retarded. Wait, what?
So at the end of Winter Soldier, Quicksilver is there, apparently. I didn't know that that's who he was. But, like, their little, like, thing is, like, these twins that they've got in boxes, and one of them is Quicksilver, because, like, he moves, like, super fast. And the Hydra, like, scientist is talking about, like, the twins and how they work miracles or some stuff like that. So
and then the other one is, like, Scarlet Witch.
It's the Age of Miracles, apparently, Colin says. He was paying very close attention.
Mm.
I was freaking out about Loki's staff and bemoaning the addition of Thor back into the universe.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because they're like Magneto's kids, right?
I have no earthly idea.
Yeah, they're supposedly Magneto's kids.
Because
so they cannot like make any reference to Magneto, I guess?
Yep.
Yeah, because like in the X-Men, he does make a reference about like, oh, my mom like knew a guy like that once or something like that.
That was a pretty awkward line.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But it was, yeah, it was a cheap laugh is what they were going for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I cannot. I loved that movie. But that one scene just like, I mean, he stole the entire show. And that's what every single person I've talked to about this movie so far, they're like, oh, the Quicksilver scene was like by far my favorite.
It's like the
and
best
like, yeah, you can't,
use of bullet time photography that I've ever seen done.
It's really good.
Yeah.
You can't watch that movie and have that scene not be your favorite. Like they purposefully amped it up to ridiculousness. And the thing for me is I was just like, God, he completely, like, he's so OP. Like, he completely does whatever he wants to do. I mean, you literally can't stop him.
Right. We were talking about, how, like, the personality of every superhero that has that power is exactly the same, like, across, like, every, like, iteration of comic books.
Yeah, they're always, like, frenetic.
They're always, yeah, like, that, like, wisecracking, like...
Twitchy,
and, like... And then Chad was talking about it. He's like, well, think about Quicksilver, and, like, he's living his whole life at, like, that super pace. So, like, for him to, like, interact with people, he has to, like, slow down. So, like, watching, like, a normal TV show with, like, sitting through a commercial is, like, it takes like a month to like for this commercial to end.
So you become like a super cynic after
you'd be
time.
Like pretty like cranky and cynical and like sarcastic if that was the case for you too. I was like, yeah, that's pretty miserable actually.
I think my favorite part about the new X-Men movie is how they basically apologize for Last Stand.
I like how they made like no mention of Professor X ever inhabiting that guy's body, or if we're to assume that it did happen, that he then somehow like mentally made the body look just like him and crippled himself.
And like no discussion of the journey Magneto had to take to like
get his powers back. Yeah. Like the only reference is when
one small flashback
is like
to
Wolverine killing Jean.
Yeah. Which I wish they would have not had that one flashback in the movie, because then we could have just pretended like it didn't happen.
Yeah, like it literally never.
But now you kind of have to like, well, I guess it happened and they must have fixed it and we just don't know how. Right. Which is good because I don't want to watch that story.
Right.
No, it's fine. The explanation of it being
because
Wolverine's drug induced shitty dream still stands.
Mm.
X-Men The Last Stand was just Wolverine hallucinating after a bad trip.
Mm.
You're on acid.
Can Wolverine even do drugs?
Maybe not.
Do they affect? I don't think they affect
because he can't get drunk, can he?
Right.
He drinks a lot.
Probably not.
Can't get drunk.
Like yeah. there is a way for him to get drunk, I think, but I think it requires like a lot of effort or something. I can't remember. Maybe. I just.
Why do you guys hate Wolverine so much?
Oh, Josh's explanation for why he hates Wolverine is actually excellent. And I didn't realize until you said that, I was like, I kind of hate Wolverine too now.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like think about it till this movie. And it was like the history lesson joke thing at the end that like made me think about it. Which like, I get why he made the joke. It doesn't actually apply to like my point about him. But everything else applies to my point about him. Everything else that he does. Which is that Wolverine has what is... like many of us would consider probably the most blessed gift that we could possibly be given, which is to have an extremely long lifespan, maintain youth during that lifespan, and be able to really survive intact any sort of encounter or trouble that you ever get into. Right? That's his power. And with that ability, and he's alive. He's not even like a vampire or something like that, which also have like a similar sort of like ability to
but
like
some drawbacks.
Right. Right. Exactly.
He's a vampire without the drawbacks. That's his power.
Yeah, exactly. He can go out in the day and some other stuff. So anyway,
and
so
doesn't
he
have
lives,
to commit murder to survive.
He but. Has. Yeah, he has lived. He has lived hundreds of years. He's experienced history, like amazing moments in time, like, and he's still the dumbest mother on the whole X-Men. He is a stupid redneck hick. He hasn't learned anything throughout his hundreds of years of existence. Nothing. He still charges in, fists a-blazin', like anytime anything goes on, Beast puts him to shame mentally. Like, he has not bothered to improve himself in the slightest throughout the entirety of his existence.
I was just like, because you started talking about that, and I was thinking, like, yeah, you think of, like, wizened old, like, masters, like wizened, like, old, grizzled, like, kung fu masters or whatever. And you think of that, like, yeah, they know kung fu or whatever. But you also think of them as just like, oh, they're so wise, and like everything that they say is so profound because they've lived and experienced so many things, and they've just got so much history and knowledge built up that how could they not be these like pillars of,
except that
right,
Wolverine is a very instinctual, animalistic character and always has been.
Well, his brain is always regenerating, so he's literally he's the same dumbass perpetually, because every time he learns something, his brain undoes it and that's his power. That's why he's able to go back.
But like
it snaps back.
That
Josh.
Obviously,
yeah.
His brain snaps like a rubber band. It's just like a rubber band.
Yeah.
The problem is that even that explanation doesn't work because he's able to like make new. He's not. He's not memento. He makes new memories. So, like, his brain is not overriding things. So, like, he just selectively only learns the names and faces of the hot chicks he wants to bone and the guys that he wants to, like, rip up with his claws.
Well, it's like he, like, reads The Wealth of Nations and then just immediately goes to a strip club. So he's like, his brain snaps back.
I mean, I would argue that that's a very human condition, though. I've seen lots of people waste gifts.
Yeah, people waste gifts, but the point is that, like, you waste gifts within an 80-year lifespan. He's wasting gifts over hundreds of years. Eventually, you have to just be like, even if he doesn't open a book, he has experienced so much that he should just have some, like, actual wisdom
from
life experience.
The thing is, like, you think about, like, I'm starting to come back around. I don't know. It's actually super interesting to me. Because you think about it, like, what actually makes someone, like, become wise at their old age? You know, like, maybe eventually, like, they come to the realization that, you know, oh, my life is coming to an end. Like, there's more important things or whatever. And they, you know, have this sort of change of heart or whatever. And they start to try and apply themselves, you know, more directly. Or they try to, you know, make more of a change on the world or whatever. Uh-huh. And, like, he just literally has none of that. Because he's like, meh. And it's not in sight. Like,
so there, that's point one. Point two is he never gets course corrected by, like, something bad happening. So, for example, if you stuck your hand into a running washer and tore it off at the elbow, like, he would grow it back, and he wouldn't learn to, like, not do that.
So, like, if Brienne of Tarth, like, cut his hand off, he wouldn't, like, you know, become, like, everyone's favorite character.
So, even though he still rapes his sister and kills children.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
The counterpoint to both of your guys' argument is that Wolverine obviously cares about other people in his life, as we have seen that to be the case. And because he cares about other people in his life, he's connected to people who do have imminent destruction, and he has experienced loss and pain along the way.
As we've seen.
And since
X-Men Origins.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And since those are the motivators that you guys are talking about,
yeah.
He has those motivators. He just doesn't care. He just wants to be stupid.
I'm going to make the Connor McCloud argument. Connor McCloud had... Connor McCloud had...
This is. Can we just refer to this as the Highlander corollary?
Yeah, the Highlander corollary. Okay. He had... Jesus Christ, who's James Bond?
Which one?
The old guy who beats his wives?
Sean Connery.
He had Sean Connery show up when he was quite retarded, when he was just like a Highlander and he didn't know.
Yeah, but he'd only lived like 30 years at
that
point.
But then at an early age, like when he started like drowning himself repeatedly and getting himself killed on battlefields and just being an idiot, and then he gets taken out, you know, an older guy takes him under his wing and like kind of tutors him, and then he becomes like a rational adult person.
Uh-huh.
Whereas like Wolverine just went to strip clubs for like 200 years and then met Xavier.
Uh-huh.
So Xavier met him at like
too late.
And so exactly. So now he's just set in his way. He's like, "Hey, bub, I want coffee. I'm a characterization of something that's plausible as a personality." And Xavier has to like soften it up a little bit, but that's it.
I don't think
this could go either way.
I think he has exhibited growth.
And there are people,
just not at the rate that you would like.
He's like in the Lorenzo Lamas like spiritual biker stage, you know, like I've got deep thoughts. I don't know what they are, but I'm looking for them. And so he just like rides his motorcycle and does stuff.
I have a real problem with a character that takes 400 years to come to that realization.
So, I mean, there are people that don't learn, that don't take advantage of what they have.
Mm-hmm.
But
do we like those
people?
That was
what I was just going to say. The logical conclusion is
I like Keith.
Don't like those
right.
People.
Hold on now. I like Keith.
Yeah, Keith learns.
I'm just saying, like, he's wasting an opportunity. He's had tons of time. He has the gift of time right now, right?
Uh-huh.
Could be using it, yeah.
I could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that any different?
How's that any different?
Yeah, well, like,
it's not 200
Keith
years.
Hasn't
it's
wasted
like 3 months,
400
yeah.
years.
but Wolverine has an unlimited amount of time.
Well, probably not unlimited.
Well, near to unlimited.
Yeah.
And Keith has a finite amount of time.
Uh-huh.
So as a percentage, he's probably wasted more. Just like lots of people have.
Uh-huh.
And it actually hasn't been 400 years. So
I don't know when Wolverine. I have no idea when Wolverine was born.
It's like
I don't think 80.
I think because he fought in the. They showed him fighting in the Civil War.
Yeah,
like, it's been they've yeah I guess they've there's been a lot of different timelines.
I'm sure that there's no like specific.
It's like less than 200 years. It's still a lot, but
Colin says 1800s, and he's the most probably comic book knowledgeable. Mm. Like,
yeah, I'm sure there's probably like real nerds yelling at us right now.
Yeah,
you have everything wrong. That's fine.
Anyway, the point is, there's literally nothing likable about Wolverine. Quit putting him in movies.
What we're trying to say is, if it wasn't clear by now.
I'm just saying, and human beings waste time.
And let me make this point, to come around to the fanboy perspective, which John is the cheerleader for.
No, John is just not as negative as you are.
Hugh Jackman.
That doesn't make me a fanboy.
Is a very good Wolverine.
Yeah.
Which is why I hate him.
Fair enough.
Just like, what's his name? It's a very good Joffrey. Hence, right. I would punch him in the face if I saw him in real life.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Jackie Gleason, I believe.
You are such a good actor.
You could not capture that role any better.
Here is the emotion that you have elicited from me with your artistic expression.
I mean,
knee to the groin.
The only reason why I bring that up is I've wasted a lot of time in my life that I wish I could have back.
Yeah.
To invest in something.
Everyone wastes time in their life, but Wolverine has made a monumental waste of a great gift.
There's been lots of people that have monumentally wasted. Like, that's human.
Yeah. And most of those people, I don't really like
them. He's not human, John. He's a mutant.
Also, he's a mutant.
Mutants don't waste their gifts.
Yeah, mutants look at all the rest of the mutants. They're all getting on the ball. Like, look at the guy that all he has is, like, the ugly face and the tongue, like, the lizard tongue. Like,
yeah,
he's still out there doing
short order cook.
Yeah. But he, like, joins up with Magneto, and he does some stuff. He went to war to fight for his country. I guess technically Wolverine did that too.
Several times, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because he just loves to fight, though. It's not because he gives
and there
a
are
crap
no consequences of, for him in the process.
Also, they did all those scenes in the Highlander, so shame on them.
Exactly.
Back to the Highlander corollary.
Yeah. Oh, man, Highlander.
Yep.
That was probably the second Highlander movie, might be the worst movie of all time.
It's up there, yeah. It's in the
definitely
pantheon.
In the discussion.
That and Warm Bodies.
Yep.
I don't even remember the second Highlander movie.
It's good that you purged it from your memory. Is a movie that I legit say is terrible.
Is it the one with like the Krogan or whatever?
No, no, no. That's the first one.
That's the first one.
Yeah,
first
that's a decent
one.
Movie.
Okay.
The Krogan? Like from Mass Effect?
The Kurgan.
The Kurgan.
Kurgan, that's it. Kurgan. I knew it was something along
the second
line.
Movie is the first movie ends with there can be only one immortal. So there's this quickening, this big like gathering. They all kill each other till there's only one. There can be only one. The second one's like, sorry, my bad. You're actually from an alien planet. And there's
the L. Ron Hubbard turn.
Yeah, and then like, yeah, like that actually happens in the second movie. I think it has Mario Van Peebles in it too. Which
no, that's the third one where he played the Kurgan again.
May not have seen it.
No, the second one is straight terrible. As a matter of fact, we should watch it.
Is that the one where Sean Connery commits suicide to lift up a fan?
Yeah.
Is there that's a riff tracks in of the second one?
I would not be surprised.
I would watch a riff tracks of it.
It is probably the worst. I was so excited because I was too young to really think it through, but I was so excited when I heard Highlander 2 was coming out because I love the first Highlander movie.
And you're like, yeah, a sequel to the movie that had a definite ending.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I wasn't old enough and wise enough to understand that, like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, where are they going with this?
Yeah. Well, then they later had a whole show. After that, which made no sense, because then he also had a brother or like a nephew or cousin,
something,
who also was like, what?
Another McCloud, of course.
And then people were still showing up as being immortal, like their buddy who like robbed their house. Then they killed him for robbing their house, and he turns out to be immortal. Like, oh, sweet! And then, you know, I don't know.
That show was supposed to take place before the whole quickening. So it was just like, here's the stuff that's flowing in this timeline.
I wasn't so sure, though, that was I don't know.
Yeah, because Connor was still alive.
Yeah, I know. He was in the show. And then he, like, gets killed off in the third. They actually make another Highlander movie where he gets killed off and, like, leaves Duncan. Like, Duncan, you could carry my name. And he gets killed.
As an aside, that actor, Christopher Lambert, I think, one of the worst actors of all time.
Yeah. Well, he's an underwear model.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, he actually made some movies. There's probably much worse actors that never got cast, right? Or is this the whole?
Or is this
the whole argument
true?
Of like, you never published a book, so you're not a writer? Which you could go. You can go with that.
Right? Hold on. Halle Berry.
I mean, yeah, she's actually the worst actress of all time.
She's got an Academy Award.
I know.
I'm just saying. Scoreboard?
And as it turns out, it was deserved. Scoreboard.
I mean, if people could make that argument, but she actually has one role where you can point at and say, that was actually pretty good.
Oh, I did want to mention my favorite thing from the X-Men movie that was not the Quicksilver scene, and that's Blink, who's super sweet.
Mm. Yeah.
Super sweet.
Yeah, oh. And the whole, the way they did that with the CGI was amazing.
Yeah. She was awesome.
And she was Asian, so she's right up your alley.
She's super up my alley.
I just have this vision of Josh, like, paw-screening it.
Can you imagine portal-enhanced sex? Holy crap.
I'm not sure I can, actually. Just, like, the vectors are too complicated.
They are. You just have to leave yourself in her hands. Just, like, whatever. Let's do this. I'm ready for anything.
Oh, we can't talk about that.
At some point in time, we
welcome
just
to episode 176 of Mise en Minis.
We didn't get a Nigel review of either movie we talked about.
Yeah, they were both fine.
Oh, so it wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah. No one wants to hear me say it. Yeah.
But you didn't argue with him about saying that Winter Soldier sucked. So I felt like...
Well, I thought it was like an average movie. Yeah. I was fine with it. I actually enjoyed all the action sequences. I hated Flying Guy. And I also hated Supercar. But I loved anything where... Like,
so
a field.
We were basically on the same page, except we took away different conclusions.
Yeah, the bad stuff in it wasn't so bad that it, like, caught... Like, it didn't... I actually walked out of the movie kind of having, like, erased it from my brain. Like, the rest of it was so good, I erased the bad parts, and I was fine.
See, for me, I was, like, so excited about the potential of the storyline, mm-hmm. and the fact that, like, it didn't deliver on that potential, like, really upset me about the movie. Because I felt like it could have been, like, just a... like amazing movie,
mm-hmm.
and instead it was like a very average superhero movie.
I think it was above average for superhero movies, but the average is brought down quite a bit by Thor 2.
Thor 2 brought down so bad, and I just watched it like 3 days before I saw the Winter Soldier. So you're like, I was like, yes, they're back. Thank God.
Right, for real this time.